We're gonna skate to one song, one song only.
Renegade Radio. You are now in tune to the resistance. I am one third of the illustrious three man booth. Mark is the game changer. I'll be holding you down with the rest of the crew, as we always do about this time. 8:30 to 10:30 Tuesday nights. Allow me to introduce the rest of the crew. Got my man, D Wills. Holla at the people. Crickets. He must have stepped out. We'll keep it moving. Right. I got my man PhD. What'd it do?
Present.
That's all we need. Present.
Right.
Present. D Will stepped away for a moment. D Will, you there? No, he still ain't there. All right.
You hear me?
Oh, there you go.
You hear me?
Okay, now we can't hear you. We couldn't hear you before. I gave you your usual holler at the people. And
can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
I'm on the air, getting the tearaways off. I'm coming out the locker room late with my jersey on, with my shorts on backwards. I had to straighten it all out just so I can come out here and do what I need to do. So
you ran back. Joker ran back in a tunnel.
I got my special socks.
Opposite of Willis
Reed, the
anti Willis Reed,
okay?
Anti Willis Reed. Oh man! So we have an excellent show for the listeners out there tonight. I'll take you through the rundown real quick. We have a special guest, fantasy expert, our resident fantasy expert, Eric Hamilton, is going to stop in early in the show. We're going to get into the funky editorial. In that section, we're going to touch on the LeBron James interview that was done on ESPN. We're going to get into that a little bit. Talk about the Miami Heat, where they're at, where can they get to this year, things that need to happen for that particular squad. Then we're going to pick up where we left off last week with each of our NBA top 50. You know, we're revising the NBA 50 greatest players list. So we're going to pick up with D. Wills and his 40 through 31, hit the 5 on the black-hand side. It's going to be a lot of fantasy football talk there. As we reflect upon the fantasy football season that just ended, you know, I went undefeated, finger in the sky, pointing to the Raptors. We went undefeated, right? Got to get through this little playoff thing, but I got to buy the first week, so it's all good. Then we're going to get into PhD's 40 through 31 of his top 50. We got the pick six. I'll finish off with my 40 through 31 of my top 50, Dogs of the Week and Dope Lines. And that's the show for tonight, folks. So we're going to get it rolling and jump right in. We have our special guest, Eric Hamilton, on the line. Eric, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir, I am. Thank you for allowing me to be here. It's a pleasure to be back.
All right, all right. A round of applause for Eric.
You know, before we jump into too much, I want to say congratulations on that undefeated season. That's very rare, and that's a phenomenal feat. Absolutely. Yeah.
I appreciate it. It's a little bit of skill and a little bit of luck. I've been fronting the league, like, you know, I did it on purpose, like I had something to do with it. But you know, it's a little bit of skill and a lot of luck. I will admit that on air, but just not to none of them suckers in the league. As far as y'all know,
hey,
D-Wills, I've been banging y'all heads on purpose all year. So I'm gonna turn it over to my man PhD. He's gonna quarterback us through the next couple of minutes while we have Eric on, and Eric is gonna give us some tips for the fantasy playoffs. He's gonna look at some waiver wire pickups. He's gonna hit on some potential sleeper IDP gems that are still out there. So I'm gonna let Eric do what he do, and I'm gonna sit back and relax and take some notes.
Right. So, Eric, you know, this is your third or fourth time on the show. You know, you're coming in. You're not even taking off your shoes anymore. You're at home, okay?
I feel comfortable. I feel like I'm at the crib. I like this.
Right. Keep the shoes on because you might have smelly feet. So keep the shoes on. So we've got some questions that will come in throughout the week to us individually as well as Facebook. And the first one is, you know, we got a lot of folks are heading into the playoff hunt in their fantasy football leagues. They got that first round coming up. So we're going to help. So hopefully you can help us and the listeners guide us through some things we may want to be looking at in terms of fantasy waiver pickups and other things that may help us through. So first, tell us some defenses that you like coming up this week.
You know, there's one defense in particular that is available that has just been dominating. Last week, Seattle Seahawks defense went against the Eagles, allowed 14 points, had four interceptions. And this week, they get the St. Louis Rams. Everybody knows how bad the Rams offense is. And we don't know if Sam Bradford's going to play. I mean, this is the prime time. They could very well put up, and, you know, everybody has different scoring in their leagues, but the Seattle Seahawks defense has just been flat out on fire. That would be my defensive special team pickup of the week. That's going to be a one-week play that's really going to put up a lot of points.
I mean, something about Seattle, though, Eric, is this, I mean, you just don't feel comfortable. Seattle and defense and putting your fantasy season on the line, starting them. I mean, how can you make the listeners feel a little bit better about that?
I agree, but this is the thing, is when they play at home, there's something about CenturyLink/Quest Field. Something about that doggone field is intimidating to the visitors, and they don't play around when they're at home, and this week they're at home, and again, you got the beat-up St. Louis Rams. Now, they're just coming off a butt-whooping from the 49ers, so they're going to be limping. The quarterback situation is crazy. Steve Jackson, you know, he's playing very well, but he got shut out basically against the 49ers. This should be, I know it's kind of hard to trust Seattle Seahawks. I mean, the name by itself just doesn't really bring solidity. You don't even feel comfortable with that. But this is going to be a phenomenal defensive performance out of these guys here, again, with St. Louis Rams on the ropes.
Okay. So defenses are always good to talk about because, you know, if you're in a 12-team league and there are 30 starting defenses, chances are you got 18 to 20 or 18 to 16 defenses out there that you can grab. So there's probably some good plays in there. The same could be said for kickers. You know,
yeah.
Most people don't carry extra kickers on their roster. And for some reason, once we kind of get a kicker, we kind of stick with them, you know, through bye weeks, and all the bye weeks were done a couple of weeks ago. So sometimes the kickers are just there. We don't really look at their performance, you know, strongly like we would a receiver or quarterback. And if they weren't getting it done, we look for some more help. Tell us some kickers that you like in this coming week.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've always been one to say, you know, a kicker's a kicker's a kicker. But, you know, every couple of weeks I will go back and reevaluate and check to see the performance of kickers over the last 4 weeks. I really like to gauge things on a four-week span. Cause now it's more like, you know, it's a quarter. And so just looking at the last quarter, a couple of kickers that are still on that waiver wire, most likely, that are putting up some decent numbers. Number one for me is Rob Baronis out of Tennessee. This week he will be playing the New Orleans Saints, and they'll be coming to Tennessee to play. The last 4 weeks, Rob is 10 for 11 for his field goals, and five of them are from 40 yards or more. So, I mean, the guy is pretty accurate, and, you know, he's putting up field goals from 40 yards plus, which is going to give you good points. Then he's also got 9 PATs. In the Yahoo standard format, he's available in 38% of Yahoo leagues. So he's widely available. So if you're looking for a good play, You know, New Orleans, you're going to score some points. So Tennessee, again, with Chris Johnson, and I have to eat crow because last time I was on the show, I think I said sell on this guy because I gave up on him. So, yeah, Chris Johnson is officially back, as everybody knows. And, you know, they're scoring points. So Rob Baronis will be a good play for the next few weeks. One other one, again, we're on the Seattle Seahawks bandwagon for a moment. Steve Hoska. Now, this week he's playing, obviously, the Rams. The last 4 weeks, just taking a look at his statistics, he's 8-for-9 with 10-point after touchdowns, and he's available in about 95% of Yahoo leagues. Again, I don't even like to ride with the Seattle Seahawks like that because of the inconsistency, but, you know, just looking at kickers, you know, you want to go with some kickers that are accurate and that are doing very well over the quarter, and those are two that I would feel comfortable throwing on my roster if I didn't have John Casey.
I mean, talk about buying low. I mean, it sounds like you're buying stock for the Seattle Seahawks.
You know, they just happen to, the field that they play on is the Quest Central League field, is the company I work for, but has nothing to do with my bias for these players.
So before we go on to defensive players, I want to get your thoughts on Alex Henry, the kicker for the Eagles. Going into the season, the Eagles were thought to have a very explosive offense. Now Michael Vick's coming back, but like you mentioned, Alex Henry is very widely available. In most Yahoo leagues, he's available in 60% of them. So people kind of gave up on the Eagles offense a couple of weeks ago. What are your thoughts on Alex Henry moving forward? They got Miami this weekend.
Well, you know, Miami is playing some really good ball. I actually thought about putting him down as one of them. So if I had four, he would be probably the fourth. You know, I still believe in Philadelphia and what they have. Now, the season is over and they have a lot of work to do, but a lot of their success is going to depend on their team being healthy and happy. And DeSean Jackson is unhappy at this point. You know, Macklin's still out with that injury. Vic is just now coming back. So while I think that they'll be back, I don't know if I'm going to trust him as my kicker for right now. I need to see some performance. I need to see a week of that Philadelphia Eagles putting in work, and then I'm more comfortable going forward with that kicker. But, you know, just from Vic coming back, and I don't know what else is going on. If Macklin's going to be back, the possession receiver, I'm not comfortable moving forward with that kicker until I see production.
But I got one more question for you, and after that, I'll let the fellas ask any questions they have for you before we let you
go.
So every time you've been on, we've got great feedback on your defensive player suggestions and how you look at them and how you evaluate these guys. So for our listeners that are in the IDP, the Independent Defensive Player Leagues, give us some folks you got your eye on throughout the next couple of weeks.
Oh, boy, I'm excited about this. I'm going to calm down. I'm too cool to get too excited. But I got some gems out there. There's a couple of rookies, and these guys are making a lot of noise. These are some folks. Okay, let me ask a question to the folks, you folks in the studio.
Yes.
Over the last 4 weeks, as you know how I do, I look at quarters. The last 4 weeks, who leads the league in solo tackles? Can anybody take a wild guess?
Navarro Bowman.
You should be familiar.
Navarro Bowman.
No, sir. Now, this is solo tackles, not combined with assists, but just solo. Phil, it's actually one of your players. I tried to give you a hint, buddy.
Washington?
James Laurinaitis. Okay, I'll just help you guys out before we waste too much time. James Laurinaitis is the number one solo tackler over the last 4 weeks. But number two is a guy named Colin McCarthy out of Tennessee. Now, Rude Rudd, however you want to call the cat, he was a starting linebacker for the Tennessee Titans. He went down with an injury, and this guy, McCarthy, has came through, and he is a monster. I mean, this guy is, who does he put you? He puts you in the mind of, I'm going to say your boy Sean Lee, but he's more of a tear. Over the last, since week 11, so week 11, this guy had 10 tackles, one forced fumble. Week 12, he had 10 tackles, one interception, one pass deflection. Last week, he had 9 tackles, one forced fumble, 2 fumble recoveries, and 1 pass deflection. When I say a monster, this guy is a monster. He's available in a lot of leagues. He's not in ours in particular, Phil, but he is available in a ton of leagues out there, and this guy is making a lot of noise. In a dynasty league, if anybody out there plays that, he would probably be one of my top defenders to add for dynasty because this guy is going to be that good. He's a monster. The second rookie that's been making noise is the guy Perry Riley out of Washington. He plays alongside of the 57-year-old London Fletcher tackle machine. But Perry Riley is a rookie making noise. He came in week 10 for Rocky McIntosh, who's been ineffective. But week 11, he had 11 tackles. Week 12, he had 14 tackles. Last week, he had 8 tackles and 1 fumble recovery. Again, those are two rookies that are just making a lot of noise. And, again, this is very exciting because this is when the strategy comes down to him. A man that's undefeated, you probably already know, is that if you have a good defense and good defensive players, that will really pad you when your offensive players don't perform. And, you know, offensive players aren't going to perform at a really high level every single week. They're going to have those bad games, and that defense can help you out. One last IDP before I close is Lawrence Timmons was one of the, I'm going to say, the hottest linebacker pickups of the year. You know, in the beginning, everybody thought because of last year, this guy would be on fire. Well, he's been a big bust so far. This guy is just a freaking disappointment. I actually picked him up as well. The guy has just been terrible. But, again, it was a lot of injuries to the Steeler linebacking core. Since the bye week in week 11, in week 12 when Timmons came back, he had 8 tackles. Last week he had 8 tackles again. While he's not getting the pass deflections or interceptions, consistent tackles, you know, that stuff adds up. So those are my IDP gems. Colin McCarthy would be my number one. I would put him right there with your boy Bowman. I would put him right there with Desmond Bishop. I mean, that's how high I am on this guy. Perry Riley's another stud, and then finally I think Lawrence Timmons is back.
Fellas, you guys got any questions for Eric?
Yeah. So this is a game changer. I got a quick question. I've heard this strategy. I want to get your opinion on this particular strategy. I may plan on employing this strategy myself, depending upon whether or not it seems like it'll work. But I've heard that an advantageous strategy is with the kicker position in particular, because it's a hard position to try and predict and get points from consistently. One strategy that I've heard to use in a playoff is to look at your opponent's roster and try and acquire the kicker of their main play, of their big scores. So, for example, if you're playing against a guy who has, you know, Cam Newton as his quarterback, you know, every time Cam gets a rushing touchdown, you at least get another point added to your tally if you have the Panthers kicker. What do you think about that strategy?
You know, I got to be honest. I'm not big on kickers. Now, that strategy, just by thinking about it, I mean, in theory, it could make sense if that, you know, if you anticipate that player is going to have a big game based on a matchup, if it's a, you know, a easy or a friendly matchup coming up. But if I didn't have a kicker that I trust, you know, just looking for something consistent, I would probably go with a higher scoring team if one is available. But typically, those aren't available. I don't really know. That philosophy sounds a little weird. Just because you have those up and down games, even my boy Cam, who I have, you know, he still has those up and down games. And if they score 4 touchdowns, you put up 4 PATs, you get 4 points. I don't know if that's good in your league, you know. But in our league, you know, the kickers are putting up, you know, 8, 12 points and those sorts of things. So I'm not sure. You know, I would prefer someone that's going to kick a couple of field goals, some 30, 40 yarders. You know, like the Raiders that get stalled out a lot, or, you know, like even Cleveland, you know, Cleveland's kicker, he's going to do some things. Or San Francisco, you know, they don't score a ton of touchdowns, those sorts of kickers. I probably didn't answer your question all the way, but I kind of bounced around it. I don't know.
I was effective. That was effective.
Yeah. No, that was effective. Question.
Anything else for me, guys? Anything else for him?
Well, moving into the playoff hunt, you know, given since that, you know, some of these teams are clinching, are there folks who have been playing really well that you should maybe pay attention to, maybe them waning off because they're clinching playoff spots. Who might you look at here in the next couple of weeks that you might, who's been playing well, but you might be thinking about, you're in a championship game, you may have to think about sitting them or thinking about another option?
Well, I'm going to assume you're referring to, based on their record, like the Green Bay Packers?
Yes.
Is that the kind of question? Okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, it sounds like from everything that we've heard, Green Bay is going to keep the pedal to the metal, and they're going to keep it pushing. So I don't think, unless there's an injury or something like that, maybe Charles Woodson or, you know, some along that lines, I think they're going to keep the pedal to the floor. But now there are a couple of players that I think is going to have some upside in these playoffs. And, again, these aren't folks that you want to grab and just say that these are my guys, but these are just some guys to keep your eye on. One, just real quick, is you know, from your Green Bay team, is Brandon Sane, the running back out of Green Bay. I mean, James Starks has been, you know, this ankle injury, he's been dying. He can't stay on the field, and Ryan Grant is old, and he's just not effective anymore. You know, Sane got in the game last week, and he put up 50 points with 10 touches. Excuse me, 50 yards out of 10 touches, which is a combination of receptions and rushing yards. But Aaron Rodgers says he has the best hands on the team. So, you know, if you think about last year, what the Green Bay Packers did, James Starks pretty much came out of nowhere, right around the playoffs, because it's going to get cold, that weather's going to change. Aaron Rodgers won't be able to gun that ball, you know, for 400 yards when Lambeau gets, you know, frozen tundra. You're going to have to run that ball. And, you know, this guy, if he's got hands like that, and he's a decent, you know, he catches very well at the backfield. He's a decent runner, doesn't look like a great runner, not very explosive. But that's somebody to keep your eye on.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on Kendall Turner? Because the 49ers, they've already clinched their division. They're pretty close to clinching that 2 seed. And perhaps week 16 or 17, they may not play a lot of their players. And Frank Gore is just always right around the corner from hurting something and being out. So I think perhaps the 49ers will protect him a little bit.
Absolutely. You know, they're getting to the point where they got everything locked up. So Frank Gore is that pride and possession. Even though Alex Smith is developing very well and that passing game is coming along, which is really going to help him out in the future, I think that they will begin to rest Gore more because, again, as you mentioned, he is an injury risk waiting to happen. So Kendall Hunter will begin to get more PT. You know, he's already getting the ball a few times, but I think, you know, as we go along to the last couple of weeks of the season, they're going to continue to pump this guy because, at the same time, how explosive and good Frank Gore is, you got to have a backup plan with a guy that has that many injuries. Same way Darren McFadden and Michael Bush. They're not rushing McFadden back because Bush is doing an adequate job. And, you know, with Darren McFadden, he's so fragile, you want to make sure this guy is 100%. So, again, you know, with that being said, you want to make sure that you can keep Frank Gore for the playoffs since you're getting to that point that you lock him up. So I do think Hunter will be effective going forward.
This will be the last question for you, unless the fellas have anything else. We got a question that came in from one of the listeners. Just, you know, what are your thoughts on Tebow from a fantasy level?
You know, cats can't never get away from Tebow. I turned on SportsCenter, this cat on there, he made the cover of the NFL's first magazine. This dude is something else. You know, fantasy-wise, I think Tim Tebow's a stud fantasy-wise. You know, he puts up good numbers. You know, he takes care of the ball. He did have a turnover last game, but he takes care of the ball, and he scores rushing touchdowns. He appears to be throwing the ball a little better, even though Minnesota, I don't know what they were doing with Demaryius Thomas, leaving him open for consecutive plays on the exact same play. I think he is an excellent fantasy option. You know, Phil, you actually have him. Our league is a little bit different because you get dinged quite a bit for you know, for sacks, and you get dinged quite a bit for any fumbles, but there's a lot of leagues that don't ding you as much as ours, and he's even more of a fantasy genius over there. But now with Tim Tebow,
Tebow been good to me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this dude is, he does, man. He puts up those numbers. I mean, now another thing to think about, just as my last one, is in week 15, Denver is playing in New England. Now, they're going to have to throw that ball in New England. So Demaryius Thomas, while I don't love the guy, he is 6'3", 235, similar to a Calvin Johnson, but he's still rough around the edges. He's been injured quite a bit, but the guy is a freak of nature. He's a big guy, strong guy, doesn't have the wheels, but he has a lot of injuries. I'm just saying, just keep an eye on that guy. Maybe if you're looking for a a third stringer, wide receiver, three flex play, something like that, in week 15, they're going to have to throw that ball. I really like Demaryius Thomas that week, and maybe even in a dynasty league if anybody out there is playing dynasty.
Eric, thanks for coming on. As always, you knocked our socks off. I will add that Eric has had another fine, fine season. He's clinched the first round bye in his league again, and your league has always been a fun one. But thanks again for coming on. We look forward to having you on again next season. And a real sports guy, pat on the back. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Eric.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys, and congratulations to all the folks in the playoffs. And my man that went, you still undefeated. Keep up the excellent work.
Yeah, I'm going to try. I'm going to try, man. Good luck to you, too, as well. Yeah, man, I'm going to try to see what I can do, man. But good luck to you as well.
Hey, you got it. I have to drop off, guys, but have an excellent night.
You too. All take right. care.
Bye-bye.
That's Eric Hamilton, RSG, resident fantasy football expert, joining us. All right. So now, we're going to transition into a little segment we like to call Funky Editorial. With me and the three-man booth, we get into an issue, a topic that has happened over the last week that we kind of want to dig into and kind of give you guys a different perspective on. This week in the Funky Editorial, LeBron James just did an interview with Rachel Nichols, I think it was, on ESPN. So we're going to talk about some of the things that he talked about in that interview as he was reflecting back upon how things transpired last season after the big move, going from Cleveland to Miami, how he was perceived and how that affected him ultimately, and then how he viewed everything that happened in the finals. So let's go ahead and get into the Funky Editorial.
Fellas, one thing we need to say. Shall we say it, y'all? Melvin, Jimmy, Coleman, Ryan, say it. Everybody want to get funky one more time.
Now, before we get into the Funky Editorial, fellas, have y'all ever noticed the names that James is calling out on that drop? Coleman, Clyde, them some Negro names. If you catch my drift. But I digress. All right, so we're gonna jump into this. So, LeBron. He did an interview with Rachel Nichols. A few things that kind of stood out as I was watching the interview. For those of you that haven't checked it out, check out the interview. It's on ESPN.com. You can go there, check it out, kind of get up to date, and you'll kind of figure out what we're talking about as you go and you watch it and listen to us. You kind of get an idea of where we're going and what we're talking about. So LeBron touched on a few things. He discussed how the perception of what he did actually kind of changed his behavior and how he approached the game from a mental, emotional standpoint. He talked about becoming a villain and trying to play the role of the villain and how that's not who he is. And it was out of character and how, it just kind of took him out of his element. I know, PhD, you saw that you've seen the interview. What did you think about those particular comments he made as far as how the perception of the public played a role in how he then started to play on the court?
Well, I thought the whole interview was refreshing. I thought that Ron was very honest. He admitted that he was doing things that were out of character, that he got caught up in the moment, he got caught up in being the villain, which he didn't like. He was very honest with himself and with America and the world in terms of vulnerable he was, and some things he did wrong in terms of decision, in terms of playing angry, how that got him out of his groove. Oftentimes, we don't see how to be that real and that honest. Now, I know some of you guys are out there, and you know I'm a little bit LeBron biased from my 7 years I spent in Cleveland. And honestly, I think for him to be a 24, 25-year-old young man, that he's handled things a lot better than most of us would at that age. But with that said, I think the interview was a good move. Was it a wise business move to show some humility? Absolutely. Absolutely. And did that play something into it? Probably. But at the end of the day, I'm glad he came out and said what he said. And honestly, I think the timing of it works out well, too, because I think the team will be able to come into the season with a fresher start than they would without him coming clean and kind of making these statements. So I was a fan of it. I think it'll help the Heat. I think the Heat are legitimate favorites for good reason. And I think they're only a free agent or two away from being a team that can seriously contend with winning 70 to 74 games this season or next.
Yeah, I too thought it was a different take and a positive take for LeBron. I thought it was a positive step for him. You know, I've been kind of critical of the way he handled the whole situation. Not necessarily critical of the move. I'm understanding of the move. Cat wants to win. You need to play with good players to win. But I also believe that, you know, that there's a certain way you go about things as a man and the way certain way you in relationships, period, whether it be a business relationship or a personal relationship, there's a certain decorum that you have to maintain. I felt like he violated that. But that's water under the bridge at this point. But I did like that he was finally coming clean. I wish he had done this sooner. I wish he had handled it this way from the beginning. That was the one thing that I felt. I was like, yeah, you're right, you know. I think if he had come out and said a long time ago, you know what, I can actually relate to how the folks in Cleveland feel. You know, they put a lot of trust in me. They, you know, they put a lot of passion in the rooting for me. And just acknowledging that piece of that relationship that, you know, you didn't become a superstar just because you deserve to be a superstar. You became a superstar because a lot of people invested in you both emotionally, monetarily, whether it was with their attention or whether it was with their dollars. People were paying attention to you. And you did something that those people didn't like. And there's going to be some backlash, you know, and I like that he finally understood. He finally seems to get that. Like, it's not that people are hating on him or people hate him, but there was a relationship, whether he knew it or not, there was a connection between him and that particular fan base. And what he did upset those people, and that's how they responded. And I think just acknowledging that also shows that, like, he's a bit – That humanizes him a bit, and I think he needs that. He needs to reestablish that human element of who he is and what he's about. You know, so I appreciated those comments where he kind of really talked about, like, yeah, that changed who I was, and, you know, he's not a villain. And I've said it before on this show, he can't play underdog. You know, he can't play underdog. He can't play the villain. He's not good at – none of those guys are. Him, D-Wade, or Chris Bosh are good in that role. They're not. That's not who they are. That's not, and that's not how they've been groomed to be. Again, these are guys that have been liked and pampered and catered to their whole life. All right, since they've been 11, 12 years old, people have been doing stuff for them and helping these cats out and pointing and opening doors for these guys. And to have all of that kind of switch up is a bit of a shock to the system. So again, you know, I like the honesty of it. I do wish if I were to have a gripe, you know, and go rush and judge, I wish that it would have come sooner. You know, I think if it had come sooner, things would have been different for him. And I think, as you said, it coming at the beginning of this season, I think is going to have it's going to help that locker room a lot. Him addressing this now is going to take some of the sting out of it for people. You know, so I think it was a good move overall for LeBron to come out and say the things that he said. I think there were things that people who had an issue with what he did have been saying all along, like, look, man, you know, that ain't who you are. You know, you've misled people, and now you're trying to do something different, and it's not working, you know. And I think, you know, and so I think that was a positive for him ultimately. I think ultimately he'll get some people off his back and win back a bit of goodwill for him. He still may not be the most loved person in the Ohio area, but, hell, he was back at Ohio State game last week, and it wasn't no deal. So good for him. And there was another piece of the interview that I thought was interesting, where he also owned up to his struggles in the playoffs. And again, a lot of people tried to kind of dismiss it and say, well, you know, this was going on or that was going on. And again, I think those people who were critical of him, he's finally admitting to what everybody who was critical was saying. And so in the interview, he talked about how he could have been more of a game changer. He could have made more game-changing plays in the finals. D-Will, what did you think of those particular comments when he talked about his performance in the finals and how it could have been better? How did you read those comments?
Well, I think that, again, I think this entire process is part of his maturation. And I think it was so easy to get caught up in the moment with everything they were going through to not be reflective. And I think that he knows that part of being a champion and winning is fighting through these moments, and you just got to be honest with it. And I think that everybody goes through it. I think people forget how tough the journey was for Jordan. I think, you know, people reflect so fondly on all those championships, but they didn't understand how difficult, how many walls he had to break through to try and get to that run. And in Jordan was emotionally drained on that journey. And so I think LeBron is part of it is just learning to be comfortable in that element, which I think he's always been kind of reluctant to be okay with that. He's always been good when things have been going good, but he hasn't been able to kind of work through those tough moments. I think what he's realizing, I don't know how he surrounded himself, because he seemed like he was much more relaxed. It seemed like he had spent some time doing some reflection. It seemed like he had probably even been having some conversations with some different people and just kind of making sense of it. So it's a good thing. And then you remember, I think Phil kind of put this in all into perspective, you know, still a relatively young guy and learning how to live in this space. So to me, it was pleasing. You know, you just got to know, how is he going to keep up when the lights come on and he starts getting these tough moments? Is he going to still be able to be this reflective? It's easy to be that reflective now, but how are you going to do it when you start to get in those tough moments, especially in this short season? And I think that he just has to keep doing this. And so I think that's where the proof is going to be.
Yeah. Again, I think the honesty and as PhD described, the refreshingness of it, I think is going to help his image overall. But I also, again, the idea that, you know, what I felt rubbed me the wrong way ultimately when I was kind of railing against LeBron in the Heat last season was I didn't feel like they were seeing what we were seeing. And to me, this is him saying, yeah, I get it now. I see what everybody else is seeing. You know, so either he's being honest or he's just kind of getting people off his back. I think he's being honest. I think he's saying, yeah, I should have done more. Because you should have. You're the best player in the league. Your team is losing. You should have done more. And so, you know, I'm hoping that he's getting that. And he's ready. He's really ready to take that next step. Because, again, at the beginning of last season, I was saying that he could potentially, with the weapons that he had around him, average a triple-double. And I still think he has, of course he has the ability to do it. Whether he's in a system that allows him to do it is a whole other story. But he definitely has the ability. And I think we're going to see a different, more focused LeBron. But I agree with a lot of points that you made. So with that said, and thinking about this interview, what are your impressions of where the Heat go next as a team? You know, last year ended poorly, extremely poorly. Not even just the losing in the finals, but kind of the way they went out. Again, the entire season of trying to play that villain role and trying to be that team that everybody hated. Again, a lot of that, to me, was fueled by the fact that they weren't acknowledging stuff that they did to make people feel the way they felt. And I think that's what was great about this interview, is that LeBron finally acknowledged, I can understand why people dislike me. All right? LeBron finally acknowledged, yeah, I could have done more in the finals. Instead of dismissing it and making people seem like they're crazy because they disagree with him. And I think, you know, so where do you see this team going? PhD, what do you see for the Heat, for this team going into this year? Does it end with Riley finally taking the reins from Spoelstra? Does Spoelstra keep his job? Do they finally figure out who's going to be the alpha dogs in the locker room and who's going, you know, kind of take the reins of the situation when things start to break down? Does LeBron finally start to look somewhat comfortable in crunch time playing with this particular ensemble of players? What do you think?
Well, I think winning fixes everything. Had they won the championship, we wouldn't be complaining about what LeBron did or didn't do. It would have been a non-issue, really. I think the biggest thing for this team, two things. First, they need to continue, like, the core of Bosh, LeBron, D-Wade. They need to continue to be strong, have a united front, and don't allow dissension, egos, and these kind of things to publicly come out. Now, I'm sure, I mean, the stuff can happen behind closed doors, but in this day and age, once it gets out, once the cat gets out the bag, the team is doomed. The second thing is they need more around them. I think the Mavericks put together a nice, nice pamphlet, okay, a young 20-page pamphlet on how to beat them, okay, how to pressure D-Wade into doing certain things, taking away what he needs, like taking away his strengths and forcing LeBron to be the player he's not. I mean, I think we all agree that he's more of a distributor than a scorer. He can do it. You know, he showed that he could do it in Cleveland. But in this group of guys, he's going to be best as a distributor, like you mentioned, Marcus. I think they need a couple of more guys because they need to get better. The cohesion part of them playing together for another season will help them naturally get better. But they need more help, more talent. More guys, you know, that can help them on the boards, that can hit open shots. The same things we were saying before the season last season. You know, they either need new guys that can come in and do it, or the guys that are there will become more consistent. I mean, the way Mario Chalmers played in the playoffs, if they get that kind of production for him throughout the season, I think they'd be happy with it. In terms of Riley and Spoelstra, I mean, I don't even want to touch that. I'll leave that for you guys.
The D Wills, as you look at everything that's transpired with the Miami Heat, ultimately, what do you think is? What are some things that you think need to happen or going to happen? You know, take it whichever direction you want to, bro.
Well, I mean, I think that if you take away all the hype, they developed and grew as a team last year and really found some good pieces. I think they began to put together their philosophy defensively. I think in some ways this short season might help them in a way that I think they're still in a position to kind of flow and get a fast start. In the East, there's a lot of, you know, change, a lot of stuff going on in the East. Depending on what happened with some of these trade rumors, it might open some things up for them even more so there. And so, you know, I expect them, you know, they went through all the craziness in the circus last year. I think now they can just kind of come in without all that stuff. They lost in the finals. I think as long as they keep handling it the way, if everybody follows LeBron's lead and just goes with this kind of humble approach and kind of pushes down the expectations a little bit, I think they're going to be fine.
Yeah, and I don't even think they need to necessarily push down expectations. I think they need to embrace the expectations, but embrace it with some humility. Embrace it, you know, last year, again, they came out in an arrogant way, and then I think they tried to backtrack, but nobody was believing that. And nobody was going to – the media and the fans were not going to let them backtrack. I think – a lot of that was fueled by the hatred of the folks in Ohio who had a problem with LeBron and him leaving. You know, a lot of that was fueled by, you know, major sports networks because it sold and hate sells. So I think what they have to do now is say, yes, we expect to be good. Yes, we're going to be good. We made it to the finals last year, and this year we expect to win the finals. And then just go out there and go about their business, you know. Go about their business, play their game, let their exude humility at all times, and then go out there and just do what they do. And I think, you know, again, they lose a couple games, just say, hey, we're losing a couple games. We're going to figure things out. We're going to work through things. And they said that at times last year, but then they also would say that and then say, why are you guys making a big deal about this? You know, just leave that part out. Say, hey, we're working through things. We're trying to figure things out, and we're going to get this thing right and move on. You know, I think any little bit of ammunition that they gave the media last year, the media took and ran with, and those that didn't like what was going on and what they were doing took it and ran with it. But, again, that was my biggest thing with them last year, that you could see some cracks in the mental armor of that team. It was everybody. It was from the coach to the last man on the team. When you got the coach in a huddle constantly talking about mental toughness, I think that's going to be the biggest hurdle for them. And I think finally just acknowledging that, yeah, we weren't mentally tough last year, and we want to be different this year. And in doing that and being mentally tough, sometimes you got to cut off those rabbit ears. Or if you're going to have rabbit ears, you got to understand that it's not people hating. And I think that's a generational thing. You know, we're all 30-somethings. These guys are all 20-something still. D-Wade's getting close to being a 30-something. We're all in a kind of, you know, at a different spot. And being at that different spot, you kind of get to a point where you acknowledge that people don't just hate on you for no reason. There may be some things that you could do differently. There may be some things that person could do differently. But usually people don't hate on you just for no reason. And you got to move on beyond that. Especially when you're a public figure, you kind of have to be able to be mentally tough enough to rise above that. And I think they're going to do that this year. I think they got a lot of good things going for them. I think one thing that can F it all up is Dwight Howard and Chris Paul winding up in L.A. If that happens, why don't you guys talk about that for a moment? What do you guys think about these trade rumors about Dwight Howard and CP3 winding up at, both of them winding up in L.A.? Is it possible? PhD, is that possible?
I pass the B. I pass the U. I mean, because I'm just excited to think about it.
I think it's definitely possible. It's Dr. Buss. I mean, that's how he rolls.
Did you think it's possible?
I think it's possible. I think because of the threat to Orlando to get nothing, the threat New Orleans to get nothing after this, I think that, all of it's possible.
Here's why I think it won't happen. And this was an interesting take, and I won't take credit for this take. I will give credit where credit is due. It was Van Pelt. I was listening to Van Pelt today, and he made an interesting point. The Hornets are owned by the league right now. They can't make a trade. They can't trade Chris Paul to a L.A., to a New York, to a Boston without getting a whole hell of a lot back. Otherwise, all the conspiracy cats are going to come running out of the woodworks in full force. And it might be like LeBron decision backlash type force. Because, you know, if Dwight Howard gets to L.A., and then L.A. somehow acquires Chris Paul, everybody's going to call shenanigans on that because the Hornets are run by the league. And the Lakers really don't have a ton of assets to give up. That's why I think it won't happen. That I think the league will be too gun-shy about making that move because it's going to have to look so overwhelmingly lopsided in favor of the Hornets that I don't think the Lakers have anything to offer. Even if they bring in a third team, most of the pieces, they could probably get Dwight Howard for Odom and Bynum and a couple picks, and maybe they can get another team involved and get some picks and some more assets, some expiring deals or whatever. Maybe they can pull something like that and get Howard. Getting Paul, that's going to be the hard chip. That's going to be the magic trick for Kupchak and Buss.
They may need magic. They may need to throw him into that deal.
Yeah.
85 magic to get that done.
Yeah. Now, teams have been able to start talking to players. They can start signing players on Thursday. So, when we're talking about Chris Paul and Dwight Howard, and this is going to be a freestyle question, right? I haven't prepped the guys. Usually we do our pre-show prep, and I send the guys some things that they need to brush up on. And these are guys who are already pretty well versed in what's going on in the sports world. So this is going to be a freestyle question. Y'all just going to have to go off the cuff because it's kind of a bit of a surprise. But give me what you got. Well, give me a couple destinations, viable destinations for Chris Paul. And whoever's got something can jump in.
LA, I like the Clipper move. Him going to LA, but with the Clippers.
Okay.
I think the Clippers have some assets that they can move back for him, as well as some picks. So if you were to put Chris Paul together, he had that force.
Hey, hold on. D-Wills, did you get robbed?
What?
Did you get robbed?
Why you say that?
It's a lot of, like, fighting going on in the background.
Man, I'm getting jacked on the computer here. So hopefully,
okay.
Hopefully it's not left up in my background here.
Yeah, we hearing a lot of background. It's not like an episode of Boardwalk Empire over there, man. Like somebody hitting you over there with some bottles or something.
Man, they're killing me, man. I'm going back and forth. We have to talk about this later.
All right, PAG, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Clippers can make some stuff happen. If they're able to swing a deal where they can keep Gordon, keep Griffith, I mean, I think you got the makings of a nice squad. I mean, it's kind of like it would be an upgrade in what Chris Paul had in New Orleans a couple of years ago when David West was playing at a high level and he was surrounded by some solid shooters like Mo Peterson, Stojakovic, and a couple other guys. So, you know, I think L.A. would be a good fit for him. But if I'm Chris Paul and I know I've got one big deal left, you know, I don't want to become Baron Davis. I don't want to become that guy that's stuck out in, you know, Siberia. But I like what the Clippers are doing. They seem to be making steps. So that's one destination I could see him at. I really like the Boston destination, honestly. Even if he wasn't willing to commit to sign the extension, because the team they have out there right now, they can't be looking 2 or 3 years down the road. They need to capitalize on the short season, you know, make sure they got the ice and everything, knee wraps all set up for Paul Pierce and KG and Allen and everybody down there, and really try to saddle up to make a run this year. And I think CP3 is certainly an upgrade from a really good point guard in Rondo.
Excellent take. D. Wills, Dwight Howard, where?
we're coming out the gutter to try to get this stuff going on. I would say I like the L.A. move. You know where Dwight Howard wants to be. I mean, so it's L.A., it's New York. And so, you know, I think if it's, you know, New Jersey moving in to Brooklyn, I think anywhere that's going to kind of lift his profile, because anywhere else other than those two spots for him doesn't fall in line with his brand message. I mean, he wants to be in a place where he's going to have a chance to have access to opportunities for TV, you know, to be able to do filming, just to be part of it. And so I think, you know, anywhere that's going to be around New York or L.A., I think the Lakers is just continues that tradition, that history of big men, the legacy of that. I can just see him really playing to be there.
Yeah, and I think the lockout, having that time between Shaq's retirement and the season kind of getting going again and people talking about this, I think if they were trying to make this move in the summer, it doesn't happen, because I think, again, the Shaq comparisons and the little small rivalry or the big brother, little brother relationship that Shaq kind of has with him, I think would have prevented him from looking at L.A. for real, at least the Lakers. But I think now with the lockout and people haven't been kind of talking about it, you know, it's one of those deals that can get done, and before people really dig into it and make those comparisons, it's a wrap and he's there and people just talking about him playing with Kobe. So I think it's more likely than it was before. I did like the idea of him going to New Jersey and him and Deron Williams being able to kind of anchor that team as he got ready to move to Brooklyn. But with Deron Williams talking about he don't know if he's going to sign, he don't know if he's going to stay, which is what he should say, because you want to put pressure on the organization to get something done. But I don't know if Dwight Howard's going to wind up in New Jersey.
Coming in from right field, okay? I want you guys to chew on this, okay, before you start throwing rocks at me. Oklahoma City, what do you think about that?
Because for who?
For Westbrook.
I mean, for which one? Chris Paul or Dwight Howard?
Oh, I'm sorry, for Chris Paul.
I'm not going to throw rocks at you on that one. If I'm Oklahoma City, I think about it. I think about that one hard. I might even call New Orleans.
But I don't know if Chris Paul is going to go for that. I think Chris Paul saw what his boys are doing. I think for some reason he wants to make a big splash. That's why he's pushing for New York, big market, branding. I just don't know if he's going to push for that. Allow that to happen.
You know, I stumbled upon something very interesting at one point over the summer. I was on, I think it was MSN. I think it was just the regular MSN website. I was going to my email, and they had pictures of Chris Paul's wedding. Carmelo was one of his groomsmen. He and Carmelo are real tight. And I think ultimately, if he can't leverage a deal to the Knicks, I think Chris Paul may just ride this out. If he gets traded, he may not sign with whoever he gets traded with, unless it's an unbelievable situation like he's playing with Kobe and Dwight Howard. But otherwise, I think he just may ride it out and play out this year, and wherever he winds up, he's going to New York afterwards. Because I think they've talked about this. I think they want this to happen. I think they want to play together. They're really tight. Like, they're really tight. They're really boys. You know, it's not even like Amari Stoudemire and Carmelo are kind of pretending to be boys. They're pretending to be tight. But Carmelo and CP3 are really tight. And I think ultimately what he's going to do is wind up leveraging his way to New York in some kind of way. Whether it be he gets traded, the Hornets get some assets, and then he says, I'm not going to resign. I'm going to play out this season. I'm going to give you everything I got, and then I'm going to move on. I can see him doing that. I think that's going to prevent New Orleans being able to get any great assets, but it is what it is. You're going to lose them anyway. You got to get something, you know. Rather a pocket full of lint than a pocket full of air. So I liked it. I do like the idea of the Boston trade for the same reasons you stated, PhD, in that, you know, they really only need him for a year. I mean, if Boston is thinking they got something long term in tow if they get a Chris Paul. I mean, they're just going to turn into the Hornets in 2 years, even if they got Chris Paul. So I think the idea that, hey, let's just rent this cat for a year, win a ring, and we'll sort out the pieces later, you know. So it's a real interesting thing. It's getting crazy. We got a couple callers on the line. Who we got with us? I know one of them is Ray. Ray checking in with us. Who's the other caller on the line right now?
This is Timmy T, Kalamazoo, Michigan, baby.
Oh, how you doing, brother?
I'm great.
How you doing?
I'm out there.
Now, we've been talking LeBron. We've been kind of talking NBA. Why don't you jump in and give us your take on some of the things that we've been talking about thus far?
I mean, I'm losing my mind over Chris Paul and D. Howard at the Lakers. I'm a Laker fan to my heart. And if they all get together, the new standard will be which team decides to get off the bus. At the end of the day, they don't want to see no Lake show with Dwight Howard and Kobe on the same court.
Nah, you don't. You really don't. Even if they give up Oden and Bynum, a front line of Gasol and Howard, with Kobe,
You could take the color purple.
That's going to be nasty.
I'm telling you, you could take the color purple out the logo, and they still don't want to see him. It don't matter who you take away. You don't want to see the Lakers with Dwight Howard and Kobe, period.
Yeah, I was just talking on Facebook to my man Kurt Brown from Miami. And, you know, he and I have been going back and forth over the last year. You know, we got into some conversations about the Heat and everything. And he's down there. He's been a Heat fan since the Bimbo Coles, Willie Burton days. He grew up in Miami. He's a Miami native. So, you know, I'm hating on it. I can't have this happen. I can't have Dwight Howard and CP3 wind up with Kobe.
It's a wrap.
But I tell you what, man, that's the way for the league to get back in get back on the front page.
It is a wrap. And I'm telling you, the league, you spoke about the fact that, you know, the league may not do it. Never underestimate the league's desire to make money. They're going to lose a good 20% of their viewing audience just because of the lockout. And I think if they get a blockbuster deal done at the beginning of this revised season, they will gain back the 20+10% of a fan base. I mean, just the casual basketball fan will be locked in if you get another dream team together. Or something that even smells like.
I agree. I can't argue with that. I cannot argue
with
that.
And this is, the NBA is not a nonprofit organization. They are in it to make money. But even if it is a monopoly or a few dream teams, they know people are going to watch that drama, period. That's money.
You're right. What made me hesitate was that the league is really very image conscious, and Stern is very conservative about the league's image and those kind of things. But at the end of the day, you got a point. You know, if Kermit the Frog walked up in there, he's green, they take him. Right, they want money. They want that green.
Yep, you better believe it. And this is the same. I mean, the league is so hypocritical with it. You know what I mean? So, the injustice of the NBA, and then David Stern faking like he wants it to be a clean league. I mean, they're just as bad as football with the hypocrisy. So I don't even listen to the argument no more that they want it to be a clean league. The truth of the matter is they're doing everything they can to attract dollars in and outside the United States, both domestically and internationally. If they can grow the dollar value of the NBA, especially after the deal they just cut where everybody lost, they got to make money, man.
Which is true. I agree with that assessment. I think everybody lost.
Everybody lost. Didn't nobody win that.
The owners didn't get what they want. They still finna overpay Nene. They finna overpay Tyson Chandler. They finna overpay a bunch of guys who don't deserve to get the money that they're about to get. And you still got the same problem. the players didn't get lost with the BRI. They lost a lot. They lost percentage points on that. So I think you're right, Mr. Territory.
The tractor trailer had a decent contract. Come on now. I mean, this is the league. This is the league that has no parity in how they deal with how they spend their money, but they are singularly focused on making it.
Yeah, Vince Carter is due to make $18 million this year. Vince Carter.
Rashawn Lewis is going to make $21 million this year.
Rashawn
Lewis. All he is 11 points and 5 rebounds really worth $21
million? Because you wouldn't bring Vince Carter to a fundraising pickup game today. But he's going to make $18 million.
Hey, man, that's why these kids, man, I'm telling you, these kids today, man, they see the data. These kids, you know, you go into any middle school, what you want to be, an NBA ball player? Why? Because if you're making you good, if you can get your foot in that door, you can have 2 good seasons, you're good.
Brother, it's kind of like the George Bush analogy. If George Bush can be president, everybody figure they can play in the NBA. It's the same thing, man. There's no parity. If a C student can get paid as the president and track the trailer can have a good contract, come on, dog. It's just fuel and false hopes.
And don't you dare bring up John Konkak. Mr. Thompson will go nuts.
Yeah, don't get Thompson started now. He's over there living in peace.
Oh, man. So,
just had to call, man, and holler at y'all.
I appreciate it, man. Appreciate it for taking
it. I love
in.
The show. Absolutely. Keep it going. All right.
Hey, you got to join us again, man. You got to join us again. Feel free to call in anytime.
I definitely will. The problem is I got a 3-year-old in the other room that just woke up, and y'all don't want to hear what I got to say to my child in public.
I dig that.
Y'all take care, man.
All right, be easy, brother.
All right, yeah.
Hey, Ray, you there?
I'm here.
All right.
I'm loving it.
So what's your impression? Did you watch the LeBron interview, Ray, man? What you thinking about that?
I didn't see the LeBron interview. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Ray's been in the woods.
I mean, he basically just admitted to everything that we've been saying. I mean, he basically kind of just acknowledged, yeah, you know, I think everybody else had a point, and I get it now, and I'm ready to move on, you know.
Well,
I let it affect me way more than it should have, and you know, I'm ready to move on, and I can acknowledge that, and I've grown from it, and let's go forward. What I want to get into, though, right now, while we have some time, D. Wills, you still hanging out there, man? You getting jumped or what? You with
him? I'm still out there. I'm having some PC issues. But I'm still out here.
Okay.
I've been going in and out, getting killed with everything over here. So.
All right. So you're gonna have to kick us off with the second 10 of your top 50 right here.
I was wondering if we could start with somebody else. I could come back.
Okay. We can start with somebody else. We'll have PhD go ahead and take it. PhD started off his top 50 last week, coming in at 50. He had Wes Unseld, Dave Cowens at 49, Paul Pierce at 48, which stirred up some debate. Alex English at 47, Earl of Pearl Monroe at 46, Bob McAdoo at 45, Dolph Shays at 44, Steve Nash at 43, Pistol Pete Maravich at 42, and Jason Kidd at 41. So, Brother PhD, take us through your next 10.
Clyde Drexler, 40. Billy Cunningham, 39. Dirk Nowitzki, 38. Gary Payton, 37. Terry Lucas, 36. Walt, I will not have a gray beard, Frazier, 35. Not Patrick Ewing, but Pat Ewing at 34. Iceman, George Gervin, 33. Bob Cousy, 32. I'm going to spend some time on 31 because I'm sure it's going to spark up some debate. Up on Facebook, I've had some people threaten unborn children based on this. 31. Dennis Rodman.
Oh.
Yeah,
okay.
I put Dennis Rodman in front of the likes of Jason Kidd, Jerry Lucas, George Gervin, Billy Cunningham, Drexler, Willis Reed, Alex English, Bob McAdoo. I put him in front of all these guys. And I'll tell you why.
Why?
I'll tell you why. Dennis Rodman changed the game in terms of he was able to affect the game in ways that other cats couldn't. He's that third guy that you need that he came in, did his job. He didn't demand the ball, and he was a beast on the boards. There's a three-year span where he averaged 18 rebounds. If you look at the teams that he's been on, the early Detroit teams, he won two championships there. In Chicago, he won three championships there. And, you know, you could argue that with those Detroit teams, he was a young player. You know, there were other people on the team that contributed more. But his energy and what he brought to the game defensively, okay, a lot of these guys we have on this list impacted the game, mostly on offense, but also on defense. When you look at Rodman, offensively, he wasn't a lot to talk about. I think his best season, he averaged 15 points, and you kind of wonder how he did that when you sit there and watch him, watch his offensive skill set. But defensively, he dominated the game where he could guard guys from the 1, 2, 3, and 4 when he was in Detroit, and when he was with the Bulls, he could guard guys 4, 5, and 3. We haven't seen anybody in our generation that could do that at the efficient level that Rodman did. Rebounding, he changed games. When you look at those Bull teams, okay, people talk about Jordan as being one of the best players to ever play. Well, Jordan didn't shoot a high percentage. He shot a lot. One of the reasons, you know, when you look at his stats and you look at other guys that shot a lot at lower percentage for perimeter players, one of the reasons it didn't affect the Bulls as much, especially later in his career, where he became even less efficient because he couldn't get to the rack as easy as he did before, was because of Rodman. You know, Rodman averaged, during those 3 years with the Bulls, he averaged 6, 7, and 5.5 offensive rebounds per game. I mean, that's an extra 6 possessions per game. So that's why I had him so high. And honestly, I considered putting him in the 20s, but I just couldn't do that in good conscience. All right, I got my catcher's gear on. Give it to me.
All right. So, I'm looking at your list, brother, and, you know, the Rodman thing, we'll get to that. You got, this is one I'm going to get you on. You got Jason Kidd at 41, and you got Gary Payton at 37. Explain that to the listeners out there.
To be honest, I'm going to be LeBron with it. I'd already put Kidd at 41. I would have swapped him. How about that for honesty?
Hey, all right. Again, we can move on now. See how that works? See how that works, Kidd? You're honest. You move on. All right. You give us some honesty. We move on. All right. I can live with that. Explained. Good. We're good. All right. Moving along. Rodman at 31. you know, I agree. I love Rodman. I love what he added to those Bulls teams. I think he was a valuable piece. And, you know, I tried to do what I could, you know, on my list to award guys who were great defensive players and kind of unsung guys who still, you know, contributed to winning formulas and winning teams, which is why I had Ginobili at 49.
We're still talking about.
Yeah, we're still talking about that one. You know, as much as I didn't have Rodman at high, I had Rodman at 50. D. Wills had Rodman at 41. You know, I can understand your logic. I don't agree with it, but I think with some of those guys, you know, it's a legitimate. You know, he played a key role on a lot of winning teams. Whether it was Detroit, even the years he was in San Antonio, they were solid. Whether it was Detroit or Chicago, he played a hell of a role on a lot of teams, and he was probably pound for pound one of the greatest defenders ever. The only person I may put ahead of him is Russell. And I think he took what Bill Russell did and took it to another level. I think he may have been a better athlete than Russell. Well, he had to have been a better athlete than Russell because he was smaller than Russell. But he could do a lot of things that Russell could do.
I ain't mad at you. I mean, the way I look at it is, Rodman, you look at everybody else, for the most part, is going to be the same as y'all is. You can't list more than one or two guys that he couldn't guard at one point in his career. Well, what about Shaq? Now, remember, back in the finals in 2003-04, excellent job on Shaq.
Hold on. We're getting a lot of feedback.
Are you falling down the stairs now?
I think that's Phil T, felt like he's jumping out the window.
Well, you say somebody rolled down the stairs in a wheelchair.
No, that's not me. I'm on a landline, okay? So, but if you look at this list, he could guard at one point in his career or another, he could guard everybody on this list. Now, I'm not saying he could shut them down, but I'm saying, you know, if the coach says, listen, Robin, I need for you to guard this guy for the next 5 or 10 possessions, he could do it effectively.
I ain't even disagreeing with that. That is truth. That is truth. That is something that I don't think you can argue. Rodman was an excellent defender. But his offensive limitations, I think, that's real high for a guy who, you know, for the latter part of his career, didn't crack double digits.
I think that was my thing is that I thought 31 was probably a little bit high for him, and part of that was having him on the list respected what he brought to the game. But then I think once you get into that 30, 20s, now it's about what multiple pieces did you bring to the game. And I thought 31, I mean, I think if you had had him at like, maybe 31 feels right. I think if you had had him at 35 or 36, I probably would have been like, okay, you got it on the edge. You know, but when you were 31, I'm like, you know, then other images might come up in my mind. So that was the only thing that I was thinking, that 31 was a little high. I could see in the 30s, but I thought, you know, 31 might be a little high.
Yeah. You know, so in basketball and in sports in general, we put a high premium on winners, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And –
Hold on. Wait for it.
I want winners.
And so, you know, I haven't heard you guys' list yet, but chances are you got Scottie Pippen somewhere in the 30s, somewhere in the 20s. And you take those five or six championships away from Pippen, okay, we're not talking about Scottie Pippen in the top 50. Just in terms of skills, okay? Possibly, it's debatable. So for me, Rodman's, you know, I'd love to see some metrics on Rodman, in terms of plus minus. There's a lot of new metrics, statistics out there that take things into account in terms of how a player impacts the game, just not by scoring. So you get a guy that, let's say you average 10 points a game for a season, but he's giving you 2 blocks. He's giving you 3 steals. He's giving you 18 rebounds. I really wonder how much was that in, like, what would that equate to points? Would all these extra stuff equate to an extra 6 or 7 points? And all of a sudden, we're looking at him like a KG. We're looking at him, somebody who's got a more unique skill set.
Well, you know, I think what you need to look at too, Phil, is the idea that Jordan and Pippen, along with Rodman, won championships. But if you would have took Rodman and stuck him on that Jazz team with Stockton and Malone, then the Bulls couldn't beat him. You know, if you would have taken Rodman and stuck him on that Lakers team when he was playing with Detroit, then Detroit doesn't beat them. You know, the things that Rodman did were so unique, you know, and you can't make up for that. You know, the Bulls went through how many big men, you know, before they got Rodman, and then they were a powerhouse team. And so I don't think that being at 31 is too high, you know, because you are going to have to take all those other variables, you know, just the winning. You know, just the idea that he won ball games.
Would you take Rodman over Drexler?
Well, look at the championships that Clyde was in. You know, when you talk about a team sport, everybody is going to have a role. Everybody has to play a role, whatever that role might be. And the role that Dennis Rodman played produced championships. The role that Dennis Rodman played on these teams that he was on produced championships. He was a great player down in San Antonio. You know, he was going through a phase where he was kind of losing his mind. Yeah, okay, you can say that. But the role that he played, you know, on the teams that won the championships, without him, I don't know that they could have won them. They would not have replaced him with one other person. You couldn't just simply put in a 20-point score and say, you know, they're going to win. So it wasn't as though he needed to score 20 points. It was those other things that he was doing that made that difference.
Good point. So that's D Wills. I mean, that's PhD's next 10. You know, I think that's a solid 10. I'm not mad at it. You know, like I said, I had a little bit of questions about the Peyton Kidd comparisons or the Peyton Kidd ranking, but he quelled those concerns. Let me take a look at my list. You know, everything else is pretty comparable where I got people. I don't know about D. Wills, but everything else is fairly comparable where I got people. So we're gonna keep it rolling. We're going to get into the 5 on the black-hand side. When we get into the 5 on the black-hand side this week, we're going to talk about some fantasy football. Fantasy football season is just wrapped up. You know, so we're going to get into it. We're going to use the 5 on the black-hand side to kind of recap and reflect. You know, let the fantasy football season marinate for a moment before we jump into the cutthroat fantasy playoff season. So let's go ahead and get into that real quick.
Five on the black hand side.
Yes, sir. All right. So number one in the 5 on the black hand side, we have your biggest fantasy surprise. I'm gonna throw this one to Ray. I'm gonna give each of you guys one of these, and I want you to chime in on it, Ray. And if you got one that you really want to share, just jump in. But Ray, who was your biggest fantasy surprise? The player that surprised you the most in the league, whether he was on your team or on someone else's team, the guy that really surprised you the most.
Well, the surprise of the year to me is Cam Newton. You know, if you look at where he was drafted or he wasn't drafted. You know, I think if you were to look into Yahoo and find out where the top, you know, two or three teams are in the league, you know, Cam Newton is going to be in a higher percentage, because when you get that kind of value and get the kind of production you're getting out of that young man, I think he surprised everybody.
Absolutely, absolutely. As an owner of Cam, he really, you know, and I have him on my undefeated team, he really took that team to another level. The team I thought was solid, but with Cam doing what he was doing, he made that team hard to beat. He made that team hard to beat week in and week out, because anytime he got out there on the field, I could count on 20 points.
Mm-hmm.
And in that particular league, a 20-point day is a hell of a day. Because of his ability to run the ball, you know, his ability. And he slowed down a little bit on the yardage that he got and the passing touchdowns, but the running touchdowns have been a major plus. It's like having a third running back in your lineup. I'd say I can agree with that surprise. I'm going to throw this next one to my man, PhD. PhD, biggest fantasy bust.
Peyton Hillis.
You didn't
throw that out to me.
D. Wills had a team full of fantasy. Would you say your boy Phillip?
I would just say Phillip Rivers is probably the biggest fantasy bust. In just two leagues I had him in, he was just incredibly a bust altogether. So I would say Phillip. Even with our debate, I just have to admit he was terrible for me.
Yeah, he's had a rough year. He's had a rough year, and I think that's being nice about it. I do like the Peyton Hillis pick, because a lot of people took Peyton Hillis mid to late second round, early third round, and I saw it coming. I admit, I took him off a lot of my list. You know, when you go into Yahoo, you can have certain guys not on your list. He was one of the guys that I made sure that I did not get on any of my teams. One, the Madden curse is real. I don't care what you believe. Fact is fact. The Madden curse is real. I stayed away from him partly because of that, but then partly because I just didn't. You know, like sometimes you get those quarterbacks who have a great season their first season as a starter. They have that great year, and then that next year the league kind of catches up with them. I felt that may happen a little bit with Hillis. He kind of came out of nowhere, put up some big numbers. I just didn't think that was a sustainable effort. So I can agree with both of you guys on that one. Rivers, I think, I can't really figure out what's going on with Rivers. He just kind of had – go ahead.
The interesting thing about Rivers in our league, we kind of have a funky scoring, but, I mean, it's not too far off of the standard. He was projected to be a top 20 guy overall, and he actually is 28th in our league in terms of overall players. Just from a practical standpoint, he hasn't been doing well. But from a fantasy standpoint, you know, that's still not as high as he was projected. A lot of people project him to be the top one or two quarterback, and he's like eighth on the list. But I mean, he's not having a horrible season.
I think D. Wills would argue with you.
he had a performance where he had like 4 points. I mean, he had about 3 or 4 week period where he just basically, in most leagues, unless you had other balance on your team, he could just basically kill your team. And so I think he had a couple of stretches where they were just, you know, you couldn't even recover from them. We really needed him to pick up, and you needed him consistently. To be in the 16 to 17 point range, and he was, you know, he couldn't do that, and he had the weapons to do it. So I think overall, because the reason why he looks like that is if you look at the last 3 weeks, he's had some good numbers. So he's basically boosting over the last probably 3 or 4 weeks, he's had some decent performances. But if you look at the previous 6, 7, 8 weeks, I mean, it's just nothing. So, I mean, he had a performance here recently where he was, I think he may have been in the high in the 20s or 30s. So he had some decent stuff, but that's kind of padding his overall numbers. But if you look at him
across. He's had a disappointing year because you expect at least, you could say even, you know, close to 200 yards in a touch or two just on anything. Like, you know, like
he did that
like
last
Joe
year.
Horn, a quarterback. Huh? What?
He did that last year. And I think that was.
Yeah, he did that last year. He didn't do that this year.
And last year he never had a full receiving corps. So everybody felt, this year with everybody healthy,
yeah,
he should just
That's
be
right.
putting up, you know, Michael Vick early day numbers, you know, just anywhere from 25 to 45 is what you were hoping for. You know, everybody thought that if anybody had a great upside of the top five quarterbacks, Rivers was going to have that upside. You were going to take.
Yeah, I agree. I think what made Rivers bust worthy, in my opinion, was I think the expectation and where he was taken. I mean, D. Wills, where'd you take him in the first round, late first round, early second?
Yeah,
you took
late
him
first, early second. Yeah.
In a quarterback oriented league, and again, that's a guy. When you get a guy that high, you're expecting week in, week out production, and when you have 4-point weeks from a quarterback, it truly puts your team at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
You know, and if you go back to last year, looking into this year, everybody felt Michael Vick would have a down year, that he couldn't put up those numbers. But everybody looked at Breeze with those similar numbers and thought, man, with a receiving corps, he should be 6-10 points better.
Right.
Week.
Right.
Now, and it just never happened. You know, last night he put up crazy numbers.
Yeah.
But like D said, last night.
So, D Will, I'm going to go to number three. Go ahead.
What were you say? Number three?
Oh, okay, yeah, we're going to go to number three. A slept-on stud, somebody who's kind of under the radar but has been having an amazing year and has been consistent just all season. Give us a guy who you would qualify as a slept-on stud.
Well, I don't think, and I took this because I had to evaluate my teams, and you know at least two of my teams struggled, but I had a team that I've been working with that started out 2-3 and won 6 of his last 8, and I'm sitting third in that league. So I went on a run. So I'm not going to say I have anybody that I could say that's inconsistent, but it's the answer to number 3 and 4 for me, because I got laughed at when I made the selection, but he's coming on strong here over the last 6 to 8 weeks along with the team, is Reggie Bush. I took them a little higher, but in terms of his performance, just because of the way my teams, and I just took this from looking at my team, he's been one that's been quietly building and doing things over the last, I would say, the last 6 to 7 weeks, where he's been putting together really good performances. And so, I haven't had the quite set of teams that I think some of you guys have had more consistent play, but as you probably know, early on, all my teams are out of position. But the team that I have right now sitting in third, where I went on a run, Reggie Bush had a lot to do with it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'll quickly throw on Marshawn Lynch. He doesn't feel like a top 10 running back, but actually he's 7th in our format. In another league, he's 10th. Marshawn Lynch, especially over the last month, has been putting in work.
Yeah, he had 26 points for me in one league. I had him on the bench. I'm like, what the hell is going on? I would agree. He's been a beast the last 3 or 4 weeks.
And you know what? Every year, everybody's got one of those two. You got to have two or three guys who you pick late, who you got later, and they play higher at a higher level for you. And for my team that's undefeated, it was Cam Newton and Marshawn Lynch. Marshawn Lynch picking it up towards the last 5 or 6 weeks has really taken that team and put it over the top. And that's another guy, and I agree with that pick of Marshawn Lynch as a guy who's kind of been under the radar and been killing it for the last 5 or 6. He kind of got off to a slow start. They had some offensive line issues in Seattle, but they seemed to fix those issues. And now he's running like he did 2 or 3 years ago when he was in Buffalo, when he first got into the league in Buffalo. And people thought that this was going to be a guy who was going to be a top 5 fantasy running back for, 5 years. And then he had a couple down years, and kind of fell off the face of the earth for a little bit. And now he's resurfaced as a really viable option, and he's giving me a three-headed monster in the backfield because we have a flex spot. So I play him in my flex spot with my other two running backs, which are Maurice Jones-Drew and LeSean McCoy. Plus, I got Cam, and that's a hard-ass team to beat. Yeah, that's a hard-ass team to beat.
Right, man, me. but we also got to talk about the young man down in Chicago, because what Forte is doing down in Chicago is Marshall Faulk redo. You know,
absolutely. Forte, before this injury, he had been a consistent stud. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and as far as running backs, you know, I don't know that too many people put him in the top five, but the kind of combined yardage that he's been putting up for that Chicago team has been pretty impressive. So there's one guy that you look at and you wish you had him on more teams. I think Forte, at where he was going in the draft, certainly helped a lot of teams this year.
Yeah. And another guy I want to throw out there just real quick is Victor Cruz at the New York Giants. You talk about a cat coming out of nowhere and balling all season. That's Victor Cruz. He's kind of come out of nowhere and just had an amazing season. He's been consistent week to week. I've gone up against him several times this week, this season, and every time I'm like, okay, he's not going to do nothing this week. This is going to be the week where he comes back down to earth. And it hasn't happened, and I just stopped thinking at that after about week six. I was just like, okay, this dude is just going to be a thorn in my side all season because I don't have him on any teams because I didn't expect him to do very much. I'll admit that.
That's not really a slept-on stud, you know. I'm thinking more of like a Marshawn Lynch, somebody who has done something before, who could do something again. I think Cruz falls into your first category, you know, just coming out of blindly nowhere and just smacking you around.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're gonna slide into number four. Give me the player that had the best single week performance for one of your teams. And I'll throw this to everybody because I know each of y'all got teams. Just give me one guy. I know y'all could probably give me multiple guys. But give me just one guy. Best single week performance from one of you guys.
I would say Brady. Brady had, 39 points for me in a week, and I had 150 as a team. But he was a beast. I think it was in week one.
Okay.
For me, it was Wes Walker. That first game against the Dolphins, he caught 8 balls for 160 and 2 touches. In our league, we get bonuses for 40-yard-plus plays. He racked up 48 points. In week 3 against Buffalo, he had 16 catches for 217, 2 touchdowns. He racked up 68 points for me.
Damn.
Yeah. What kind of score system y'all using?
They knew they using something. The Loyola
Marymount scoring. The biggest difference is you get 10 points or 10 yards per receiving point. The other thing is you get bonuses at 100 yards, like 1 point, 150, you get 3 points. Over 200, you get like 5 points. So he had like 12 points of bonuses, but even if you look at his standard scoring, he was well over 50 points.
Yeah.
Okay. Ray?
Well, after the draft in a couple of leagues, you know, I snatched up Cam Newton after that first week. I didn't care if he never played like that again. I was not going to take a chance that he would for somebody else. So it was, Cam Newton, it made a difference in two of my four leagues, you know. I played in four leagues, and I'm in first in three of them, and one I can't make the playoffs, which is my very own league, but you know, I think that I can't go into how many points he may have scored, but I know that without him, I wouldn't be in first place in those two.
Yeah, I have to go with Cam as well. Last week, to wrap up my undefeated regular season, Cam went for 38.9 points for me, which is a huge point total. And my team put up 146 points between Cam, Marshawn Lynch, LeSean McCoy, and Maurice Jones-Drew last week, I probably had 100 points with just those four players. So, like I said, that squad is hard to beat. I'm looking at that. That's my money squad. And if they get upset, I'm going to be pretty pissed off about it. Because my receivers are solid, too. Roddy White and Brandon Marshall, that's gangbusters right there, man.
You do realize that, you know, 5 years from now, if you do run this league out, people are not going to remember that. But if you lose that first game in the playoffs and don't even get to touch the money, oh, they're going to remember that for the rest of your life.
Oh, I guarantee it.
They're going to talk about you like a dog.
I guarantee it because I've been talking shit.
If you lose, I'm going to call you Bella.
Actually, if you lose that week, I'm going to send the money to you in an envelope so you can send it to somebody else. How's that?
That's cold.
I was thinking about that the other day. You hate to hate on a guy like that, you know? A man is undefeated. You don't.
I've heard it. I ain't going to grind myself. I've heard it.
Yeah. But it's not going to be funny unless you don't win. You know, if you don't win, then everybody in the league going to be, they just going to be sitting there going, ain't that a bitch? Laughing, you know? I'll be honest, all of the years that I've played fantasy football and all of the leagues that I've been in, I don't think I can remember anybody going undefeated. Think about it.
As I said earlier, it's about 20% skill, 80% luck. You know, you've seen it, Ray. I've had some weeks where
I always outscore my
opponent, no matter how many points they score. If they score 64, I got 68.
Yeah. And there was a week that you did score 68 and won.
Hey, and that was against Devon. He scored 40.
Philip Rivers had like 9 points.
So, like I said, it's a little bit of skill involved, but a lot of it is luck.
For you, though, you know, that's exactly what a pick like Cam Newton does, or a pickup. You know, all of a sudden, you got one of the top three scorers in the league at the end of the draft. It was like, you know, like a present. You know,
it was.
You went all through Christmas, and then you opened up the Rolex, and like, damn.
Yeah, it was like finding $20 in the couch cushions.
Yeah.
You know, it was like finding that $20 bill in the couch cushions. You're looking for the remote and you stumble upon $20. Everything after that is great.
I didn't have, Cam Newton was not on my mind. You didn't have a great preseason. I could have never predicted that he would have done as well as he's done. But after that first game, you know, as that first game was being played, I think I snatched him up in every league I could. Simply because I couldn't take the chance that he would end up on somebody else's team.
Yeah.
And then I've had him with Stafford, and I didn't play him last week. I thought that Stafford would outplay him. And I still won, but it's irrelevant. But, you know, you can bet that I ain't going to put him on the bench for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I played wait and see with him for the first 2 weeks. He had that first week, and I was like, okay, it was against the Cardinals. Let's see what he does the next week. And then he went against the Packers and did the same thing. And I was like, hell, I got something here.
And remember when we talked about it, it was like, this kid is not a fluke. This is not a fluke.
Yeah.
This is what you can expect from him. This is just how he plays. All of a sudden, it's no longer preseason. School is over, you know. We're going out into the real world now. I'm gonna have to do what I gotta do, and he plays with such you can't describe it. I can't wait till they build this team around it. This is your future. This is what you're going.
Yeah, let them get a couple more receivers and some weapons, and they figure out how to run the ball up there. It's gonna be a problem. It's gonna be a serious problem.
No.
So we gonna transition right now into our second. We're gonna have D Wills, are you ready to unveil your 40 through 31?
Yes, I had to go to another computer, and so I got a whole bunch of things I'm holding up. So if I'm not coming through very clearly, y'all let me know.
Nah, you're coming through clear now, man. You ain't going down the steps or nothing.
Oh, man, it's been crazy tonight, but stay with me, people. Stay with me.
All right, let's rock through it. Let's rock through it real quick.
I got Bob Pettit, Bob Cousy at 39, Wes Unseld, I think, at 38, Scottie Pippen at 37, Dominique Wilkins at 36, Bob McAdoo at 35, Clyde Drexler at 34, Allen Iverson at 33, and Jason Kidd at 32, and then Patrick Ewing at 31.
Okay. Ray, PhD. Y'all got anything to say? I got a gripe right off the top. I'm gonna let y'all go first.
I know I had a few in there.
I really don't. You know,
I'll go then. Iverson over Scotty.
Well, and this goes back to what Phil said a little bit ago about it. I love Scotty. I think, but I go back to what's my guy from Duke that does all the play by play. Our former guy Jay Billis says we do a good job of counting, and I think Scotty has a lot of great attributes as a player. He's a great player. We pad him up because of the championships, but I don't put Scotty, and I don't think, and I'll say this, I don't think Jordan wins championships without Scotty, but I think there are certain things about some of the players that I have.
D. Regardless of the championships, AI was a liability on defense. Scotty was never a liability on offense or defense.
But my thing, AI for me would have been higher. AI was near the tops in steals all the time.
That's because he played passing lanes. AI was a horrible one-on-one defender.
I'm going to tell you right now, if AI had made his teammates a little bit better, that tells you how good he was. If AI would have made his teammates a little bit better, I probably would have had him higher. I'm surprised.
And I would still have a problem with that. And I love AI. I love AI. But AI was a liability on D.
Well, if you think about the small guys of all time, you can't go too many people. I put Isaiah ahead of him. You may put a couple other people ahead of him. But you can't go too many guards and not have AI. And I did in one of the most prolific scorers in the game. I would say just AI dropped for me. When he probably could have been higher for a lot of the things that you're talking about. But I think I love Scotty. But I think – with Scotty, this is where I go with Phil, is if you take away the championship pieces and look at him as a player, even when they put him in the top 50, I was like, Scotty in the top 50?
Now, wait a minute, man. Y'all finna have me, y'all tripping.
I know you got those Chicago roots.
Now, wait a minute, man. Y'all killing me over here, man.
I got Scotty.
Man, listen. All right? Scotty, three-time All-NBA first team, two-time second team, two-time 13th, eight-time All-Defense first team, two-time All-Defense second team. What? Without the championships, he's got a better resume than most guys.
See, the thing for me with Pippen, because I actually have Pippen in the late 20s on my list, so we'll probably talk about him in the coming weeks, at least on my list. The thing that validated Pippen to be so high on my list was the year and a half that Jordan was out.
Right.
That showed me that, okay, if Scottie had to, he could lead a team and play good ball and be the guy. On the one year, the full year Jordan was out, because he was out a full year, and then he came back last 20 games of the season, that 94-95 season. But that 93-94 season, Scotty put up numbers, 23, 9 rebounds, 6 assists.
6 assists, almost 3 steals a game, a block a game, 49% from the field, 33% from the three-point line. Hey, I ain't even never averaged that many steals in a season. Come on, D-Wills!
But in the moment, Tony
Kukoc
hit the shot.
Right, but
what shot
did AI ever make?
But look at this. AI took
the
team to the finals when he had nobody.
Right, and they lost.
And they lost, but he went to the
So did LeBron. So did LeBron. So did LeBron.
Yeah. But Scotty had plenty of
players. A lot of guys have taken their teams to the finals and lost.
That team didn't go to the finals. I know we argue. I knew this was going to be a hot button for y'all. Chicago Roots.
Scotty's just a better player. Scotty's a better rebounder. Scotty's a better passer. Scotty's a better defender. The only thing you can say AI is better at is scoring. That's it. What other facet of the game is AI better at than Scotty?
For most of his career, had to be the man when he had nobody around him. His teams were.
AI couldn't accept not being the man. He proved that at the end of his career.
But
he couldn't accept anything else. He couldn't do anything else.
At the end of the day, his
team. He wasn't impactful.
Always,
he couldn't have an impact without being the man.
His teams were in it to win it.
His teams were not always in it. Let's not even say that. No. AI missed the playoffs quite a few years.
What we do know about AI is we've seen him, we can judge him because he had to lead by himself. We don't know that about Scott. We can speculate, but what we do have about AI is that he had to lead. However you define that, he had to be the face of the franchise.
Right, but even in that though, even as a leader, so then judge him as a lead dog. Judge him as a lead dog. Did he ever make any of his second fiddles better? Did he ever make any of his second fiddles better?
And that's why he's winning
for
mine.
Hold up. Here's the problem with Scottie Pippen, and you got to go back to the New York series. You got to remember all the crying.
Migraine. Yes.
You got to remember that under pressure, when Scottie Pippen had to do it, you couldn't know if he would do it.
Migraine.
That's the problem I always had with Scottie Pippen. When New York used to bang him around, Scotty used to cry like a bitch. He'd have Phil out there crying for him, too. And as good as he was.
And you know what? I can take that. I can take that criticism, and I can say, yes, you're right. But I still think he's ultimately a better ball player than AI. AI was tough. But I think AI was tough and strong-minded to a detriment of everybody else around him.
Oh, sure.
And I think he brought his teams down with his strong willingness.
Sure.
And that's the only reason
he's
not in the top
20. That's the reason he should be in the
40s. But you getting hung up on, you getting hung up on, because I remember when they came out with a top 100 and Scottie Pippen was in it, and I'm going, wait a minute. 100? Scottie Pippen won the top 100?
Really?
You take away Michael Jordan. You take away Michael Jordan. And you got a snot-nosed kid. Forget about what he can do night to night. When you get to the playoffs and you really got a dog up, and you bang him around a little bit like New York did, he's going to snivel. He's going to be sniffling over in the corner like he got left.
But in the same sense, you put AI in that situation, and he's going to suck the life out of his own teammates.
Sure, I'm not disagreeing.
And he's got to go one-man show.
Why? Because everybody's
standing around watching him. Because he's pounding the air at the ball.
Migraine headache, that's all I can say.
Practice.
Practice.
We're talking about practice. Not the game.
We're talking about practice.
Oh, man.
That's the beauty of putting a list together of anything. This is your perception.
This is why we're doing it. It's fun.
Sure.
All right, we got about 5 minutes left. I'm gonna go ahead and go through my 40 through 31, so y'all can get on me. It's my turn. All right. So at 40, I got Drexler. I got Clyde at 40. At 39, I got Cowens. At 38, I got Nowitzki. At 37, I got Wade. At 36, I got Pistol Pete. At 35, I got Pat Ewing. At 34, I got Tiny Archibald. At 33, I got the Admiral. At 32, I got Frazier. At 31, I got Worthy. Have at it.
Worthy's not somebody who made my list. Talk to me about Worthy.
You know, again,
I view Worthy
in a similar vein. I view Scotty. I think he was an excellent player. He was on a team where his numbers may not jump off the page at you, but I think that was because that wasn't what he was needed to do. As far as being playing his role on a team, if you had to take a guy who was going to be your second or third option, I think, you know, and your lead dog is a top 10 guy, I think Worthy's going to be one of those guys that you're going to pick as your second guy. When you go to elite second guys, you know, which a lot of these guys are, when you get outside of that top 20, 25, a lot of these guys are second guys. I think Worthy is one of the best.
And Worthy was on my list. I took him off, and I had a feeling I would be surprised if no one had him on there. I was still debating to the end whether or not to put him on the list. I think I had him. I think I had him just at 53 on my list. Worthy is a unique guy because they don't call him Big Game James for nothing. But he was just one of the tough covers. And I think even when we talk about Kevin McHale and going into the torture chamber, Worthy was that same kind of guy over that same period of time. That when he got the ball, went to the best, people couldn't stop him. And so I think that's something that we should be considering. But I don't have a problem with Worthy.
I just don't know how a list of a top 50 would not include him. And I look at it in the same way. If you take Scottie Pippen off the Bulls, they don't win championships. If you take James Worthy off of the Lakers, they don't win championships. That was at a time when those teams were 3-5 deep. You know,
right.
When the Bulls were winning the championship, those teams were 2-3 deep. You take a Scottie Pippen off the Bulls, they don't win championships. You take James Worthy off the Lakers, they don't win championships. They get close, but they lose to teams like Boston. They lose to teams like Philly. They lose to teams like Detroit, who go 3-5 deep. And so you can't ignore that. And for whoever it is that they're going to write about and immortalize and build statues for, when you take away those other players, there's no championships. So, you know.
Yeah, I can buy that. I can buy that every day of the week. You know, honestly, there's probably 10 or 12 guys on my list that I never saw play, but I just felt so compelled to put them on the list because other people had them so high on their list. So, for example, Bob McAdoo or Dolph Chase, they're like 20s, 30s on other people's lists. They just barely made mine because I just never saw them play.
Right, right.
Sure.
You know, I mean, if I was to look at cats that I saw playing my own eyes, you know, probably the 80s on, Worthy would certainly be on that list. He was like in the 50s.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, fellas, we got about a minute left. We're going to continue this conversation for the listeners out there, for the downloaders. Keep, you know, stay with us. And when you get the download, we're going to keep this conversation rolling. And we're going to get into our pick six in the after-hour section of the Real Sports Guys. For the live listeners out there, appreciate you listening. Take care. Have a good night. We'll check you next week. If you get a chance, download the show. You catch the after-hours. You'll hear us finish up these conversations and talk a little bit more snitching it as we keep it rolling until whenever we stop. You know, and we kind of tap out at some point. And that could be an hour later. That could be 10 minutes. you never know when after hours. You know, you never know how it goes. It's like the after party. Sometimes it's popping, sometimes it's not. All right? Again, be well. Take it easy. Peace.
Marcus, I got my hand raised up over here.
You got your hand raised? I didn't see that on camera. Go ahead.
Got your hand raised.
I got my hand raised. So last week when we did this, it was interesting. Devon had Steve Nash at 48, and you and I both had Steve Nash at 43.
Yeah.
Looking at this week, we're seeing the same thing with Pat Ewing. I had him at 34. Devon had him at 31, and Marcus had him at 35.
Yep.
So, Ray, I want to ask Ray, do you think that's just, or do you think he should be a little bit higher or lower than that 31 to 35 range we all have him at?
Well, that, you know, what I'd have to say is that I haven't heard, you know, the 50 through 40, you know. Patrick Ewing, his biggest, for me, Patrick Ewing's biggest downfall is he never really had a great team around him. And so, you know, his skill set was such that, you know, he certainly should have been, you know, a champion. Patrick Ewing's problem was Patrick Ewing, you know, and the Patrick Ewing contract. And the idea that New York couldn't pay anybody else because they had to pay Patrick's ass all the time. And so, you know. You know, it was his own worst enemy. But as far as just being a ball player, I don't have a problem with him being in the top 50, and I don't have a problem being in that 30 range. You know, if I have to sit down, you know, I need to sit down and make my top 50 and say, okay, you know, where does Patrick really fall in that? Because, you know, I would have loved to see him around, you know, some better players. I wonder how much better he would have looked if he would have had some players around him. Because on his own, he's certainly a top 50 player. But he had a skill set and a potential to be, you know, a top 20 player, a top 10 player, if he wouldn't have been so damn greedy.
See, for me, and I can dig what you're saying, because, you know, when I look at it, Charles Barkley was one of the few guys that got really high on my list that never won a championship. Pat Ewing, let's see, Marcus had David Robinson at 33. I've got David Robinson in the 20s. When I was making this list, I was asking myself, for the same thing you just said, Ray, it's like, if Pat Ewing would have won at least one championship, he probably would have been at least 10 to 15 slots higher.
Sure. And when you look at it, that's a good comparison, because I don't know that David Robinson was better than Patrick Ewing. You know, if you take away the years that he, you know, didn't play in the league, you wonder how much better he would have looked. You know, there's so many variables in that. But when you take a true center like Patrick Ewing and put him with a David Robinson, how do you rank him? How do you rank him? You know, higher.
Where I separate them is that I think the slight difference with David Robinson. I think David Robinson was as effective as a scorer. Well, I think where David elevated his game is at a defensive end. I think Patrick was a good defender, but David was, you know, a defender of, you know, player of the year type of defender. And all the, I just think that element of his game took me a little bit ahead of Ewing. And I think that Ewing had some big moments where he didn't complete. So it wasn't just about not winning a championship, but there were some big playoff games where the ball was. Because when you get into this area, it's like you get into those moments. Like,
yeah,
when you start getting
right. Hair.
You start to get to 30, into the 20s, into the top. Now you got to say, you know, it was that moment where he didn't step up. Because these are all great players. I think for Ewing, I think what I miss is I think he had serviceable teams, but there were times when you wished he would have completed in the moment. And I think that was something that kind of had me knocking down. I thought about putting him a little bit higher, but when I looked at some of these other players I had ahead of him, that was something that kind of that I had to think about.
Yeah.
I'm hearing names that I don't know, you know. I don't like Steve Nash's game that much, you know. I don't know that Steve Nash would have made my top 50. You know, I've never been a big Steve Nash fan.
I've never been a Nash fan either, but I had him at the bottom of my list. I had a lot of guys who were exceptional at like one aspect of the game, whether it be Dominique or Dumars or Rodman, Peyton, Nash. I had guys like that at the bottom of my list. AI was at 45 on my list.
You know, Nash
is an exceptional passer and shooter.
I've got a question.
You know, I would have had a guy like Doc way high on my list.
So on 34, Marcus, you have Tiny Bought Archibald.
Yeah.
And you know, I'll ask you, but also maybe Devon and Ray can chip in. You know, I haven't seen him play much. You know, I think in the early 80s he was with the Celtics, but it seems like that was towards the end of his career. I've seen some, you know, replays or whatnot. But, you know, and I don't think he made Devon's list, and he didn't make mine. Talk to me about why he was so high at 34 on your list, and then I'm just curious to hear some stuff about his game.
Absolutely. To me, Tiny was AI before AI. Tiny was AI before AI, and that's what hurt Tiny, is that he was AI before AI. He had a similar outlook where he had a certain style of play, and he really didn't bend his style of play for what was going on around him. But Tiny's the only guy to ever lead the league in scoring and assists.
Yeah.
He's the only guy to ever do that. So he was like AI with better vision, in my opinion, from what I've seen of him. I was able to catch some of the hardwood classics on Tiny. I knew of Tiny. I know his track record as far as his stats. I've heard stories about Tiny from older cats. And then I was able to watch him. And I felt like he was a precursor to what AI was doing. And he was a little bit better defensively. And he was definitely a better offensive catalyst, offensive facilitator than AI.
You know, and if you don't have Nate Archibald, then you don't even have Calvin Murphy in your conversation. You know, and it's one of those things. You know, it's who you remember and how the game was played at that time. You know, when you saw a cat like Nate Archibald play, I mean that's why you watched. But that's exactly why you watch Philly, you know, to watch AI. You knew what he was going to do. That little stutter step, and then all of a sudden, he's a half step back, there's enough separation, and he just scored on you, and he's backpedaling, laughing at you, you know. AI was a fun player to watch.
Talking about you know, practice.
Archibald. Yeah.
Tiny, I mean, and I debated Tiny big time, there are a couple people as we started talking through it that I wish I would have just made some changes. If I had to do it all over, I thought through it. He was one of them that I thought, you know, I'm looking at some of these other folks and I'm thinking, I have a couple like that. That now that I've had a chance to kind of reflect a little bit as we got to these conversations, and he was one of those where I'm thinking, you know what, because that's a sensitive, very strong, that he should be on the list. So I don't have a problem. I mean, when Marcus said it, I said, that's a good pick. So we're going to have something like that. That's a good pick. Like, I didn't have him on my list, but that's a good pick. And he's one of the ones
I was telling Phil before we went on air last week and we started going through, what I did with my list was I tried to do, like, with my top 9 to 10 to 11 guys at each position. And then from there, I started to go through my rankings from the bottom up, like, okay, you know, I went to the bottom of my guards. I looked at the bottom of my big men and my forwards, and I said, okay, who would be, you know, at the bottom of these lists when I ranked the top 10 forwards all time, top 10 centers? And that's kind of how I went through. And I had Tiny – when I did point guards, I had Tiny ahead of Nash and Peyton and just after Frazier and Cousy. So –
when you do pick it out like that, that's how you miss the Calvin Murphys. That's how Nash ends up on your list. You know what I'm saying? Because you've seen Nash play, you realize that, you know, he has the skills that certainly rank him there. And he has the recognition, you know, by winning MVPs and shit like that, but you know, truth be told, for me, you know, if I'm looking at a list and I'm thinking, you know, how can I put these guys on teams that would be, you know, just superstar teams, all of a sudden a guy like Nash doesn't get to play. You know, he don't get on the court. So a guy like Tiny would get on the court.
And to tell you the truth, that was where my debate was, you know, around Nash and Tiny, all those folks were in that debate. And, you know, I think if I would look at this list in a month, I might make that change. And so, yeah, I mean, there are going to be about three or four players that someone's going to have on their list and probably pretty high that we're going to say, and I think Tiny Archibald is one of those, that we all, you know, those who are thinking through it would say, yeah, I can see that. And in fact, he might, if I'm not, I'm thinking about it, he might even be higher on my list. So he's one of them I fought with. I have a couple like that. So he's always going to raise a debate for people.
Yeah. And like I said, this is a fun thing to do. We all have Pistol Pete at different spots.
I'll be honest with you. Yeah. Another player that I have a problem with is Cowens. You know, to be honest with you. In much the
oh,
same
yeah?
reason that I – oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. If you take away all the talent that Collins had around him, or if you take that talent and put it around some of the other players that may not make your list, you kind of realize how vanilla Collins really was. You know, just like I wouldn't have a – you know, I don't know where this list is going, but, you know, if Collins makes a list but Bill Walton doesn't, you know, it's hard.
Yeah, Bill Walton didn't make my list. Not in longevity.
Right. Well, but there.
Because otherwise, I'd have had Grant Hill on my list. I don't have
sure.
Grant Hill on my list.
I mean, I have Grant.
You know,
in the 50s. I had Grant. In
Penny Hardaway could have been on the list.
You know, and
you know,
I don't
so
know
I,
where your list
because
is
of injuries. Because once you get into injuries, the guys who had great careers and then injuries kind of killed them. To me, yeah. there's a lot of guys who you could add.
Ready
well, you
to
know,
answer your question. I mean, a lot of people have Collins much higher. It's the reason why I had Collins lower.
Yeah.
And I think that over time, in the next 10 years, he might be off the list.
I think he's going to be off the list. Because, like, I debated in my particular rankings of my centers. Like, I was looking at, you know, Collins and Robert Parrish were, like, my last centers in. And I was debating, do I add Dwight Howard? Do I add Dwight Howard? And y'all know how I am about Dwight Howard. So I decided not to add him. but I could see Collins replacing Collins getting replaced by Dwight Howard, or Mikan getting replaced by Dwight Howard on my list in a couple years.
Right. You know, and that's like, you know, that when you look at players like Alex English and George Gervin and Julius Erving, and you don't say Bernard King, then you realize you didn't get a chance to see him play. He didn't get the chance to play a long time. His career was cut short. You know,
and
those
you
are the
that point
those...
with Bernard. Yeah, Bernard was the reason his career was. It was not. If he had about two or three more years of just that killing, because he had about 3 years. If you just like looked at a 3 year stretch of
right.
his rebounding you know. And scoring.
Right, because then you got to add cats like Vince Carter and T-Mac, who had like a 4 or 5 year run where it was like unstoppable.
Sure,
but then there was nothing else after
but,
that.
But cats like Pete Maravich, you remember like that. You know, cats like Pete Maravich, you remember like that. He didn't have that long a career. You know, it's one of those things.
But when I look like a guy like Pete and some of these guys, in the next one is, you know, who changed the way he looked at the game. I mean, he had such an impact and dominance when he came in that there are certain players like that that you say the game took a jump. Like when he entered.
Here's what happened though, D. When Pete Maravich came in doing the things that he was doing, they allowed it. Okay? There were the Globetrotters were doing that shit long before Pete ever picked up a ball. People didn't want to see that clown shit. They didn't think it had a part in the NBA until a white boy started to do it. And then they said, oh, this is basketball here. Look at him do that stuff. That stuff was being done years before. Pete started doing it, and all of a sudden it was like, we got a new messiah. Pete wasn't doing shit that wasn't being done, before. Pete just was allowed to do it. That's and if you want to talk about the revolution, the revelation, Pete just brought it to the fore. Pete did a lot of shit with a basketball nobody ever saw before. And the only reason they never saw it before is because nobody wanted to play that way. Everybody was doing that George Mike and shit. You dribble twice, you pass the ball.
White boy was still hitting 30.
I agree. But he was doing it in such a way that people were standing around watching it. He was doing it and dribbling behind his back, between his legs, doing little loop ups to the basket. They were doing that all over the country. They just weren't doing it in that NBA gym. That's the problem I have with Pete Maravich. They when you watch him and the little things that they show him doing on the sidelines and he was a freak of nature only because he was the first white guy that was really doing that shit. And then if you look at old NBA teams and what Cousy and those guys were doing, basketball was a really bland, chest pass kind of a situation. Yeah, he was breaking them up to 30, but.
I got another observation. So Dirk Nowitzki, we both, Marcus and I both had a 38. I don't think he made your list, Devine.
We haven't got there yet.
What?
Oh.
What?
Wow.
What you mean we ain't got there yet? Dirk to your top 30? Oh, just wait till next week.
I was thinking about putting Dirk early higher too, actually. I mean...
Ray, what I would say about Pete averaged 24 points a game, 4 rebounds, and 5 assists over his career. I mean, and he was. You start looking at what he did in terms of All Star level. I mean, I think he had a good career. He's much lower on my list than he is on everybody else's. I mean, if you look at other lists, I mean, even. Some of the more recent lists, he's much, much, much higher on that list. I think on our list, he's much lower than you might see him on some of the so-called experts' list.
Yeah, Phil had him at 42. I had him at 36. What'd you have him at, D?
I had him a little higher. I had him at 40. Well, he's coming, so he's about 22.
What did Connie Hawkins average?
I can pull all that up.
I know. You got the computer that I can't keep hearing it fall down the steps.
Wait a minute.
You starting to hit you, man. You got Dirk in your top 30.
We'll talk when we get there.
Yeah, I guess so, man. I guess we're gonna have to, man. Your top 30 better be power forward heavy, man. Because the only power forward you got below Dirk right now is Rodman.
I got a lot of power forwards in my top.
You better if you got Dirk at 30.
I would say probably one of the strongest positions probably over the last 20 or 30 years is on a consistent evolving has been that power forward position.
Absolutely, which is why I'm baffled
sure,
at how you got
sure.
Dirk beyond 40.
Well, just begin to watch how my stuff evolves.
Okay, we're gonna have to watch that. So yeah, Ray. So you didn't get to hear last week. So last week I'll give you my bottom 10. All right, my bottom 10. I had Rodman, and this is the one I called flack for right here. I had Ginobili at 49. I had Dumars at 48. Dominique Wilkins at 47. Robert Parrish at 46. AI at 45. Peyton at 44. Nash at 43, Pearl Monroe at 42, and Dave DeBuscher at 41. Now, Dave DeBuscher, I will admit, I had never seen this dude play, but from everything that I read up when I was researching this, dude was good.
He was good.
So,
he was,
He was a rugged rebounder who could shoot, is what I gathered.
Well, you know, but Davey Busher, Jack Sikma, you know, it was that type of thing. It was,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, so give me your opinion on Ginobili. I put Ginobili on my top 50. I had him at 49.
Yes,
Bill
and
D laid into me and said, "Nah, you can't have him there. You can't have him there."
That's another one of those situations. Without Ginobili, you don't win championships. You know what I'm saying? It's you can make the same argument that I made earlier with Worthy and with Pippen, but you know when you start talking about peeling off 50 players of all time.
Yeah. Now will Paul Pierce be in your top 50?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. They both had him in their top 50. I don't have him in mine. I have him just outside. Yeah. I have him just outside of my top 50.
Yeah, Paul, you know, and again, it's easy for me to say that because I haven't sat down and really put a 50 together. Because that, you know, you really start checking off some players that you go, God, am I really taking that motherfucker off?
Exactly.
Off
it's
here?
Not easy to do, man. It's fun to do, but it's not easy.
Like you said, you can take 50 players and say, okay, these are my top 10 centers, these are my top 10. But really, you can't because it's, you know, that power forward position really is one of those positions.
Right, and at some of the positions, I went like 11 or 12 deep, and then some of the other positions,
right,
I didn't go that deep. You know, like point guard, I only went 8 or 9 deep on point guard because those guys are there and. Like these are the guys that would be on a list. These are the guys that would be on my list, point guards, and I'm gonna leave it at that. I'm not adding nobody else just to get the 10.
Right, exactly. Because it's like you know, after you know, you got Magic, you got Robinson, you got Nate Archibald, you got. You know, I mean, I shouldn't be criticizing a damn thing. I should go home and put down a 50 and see how hard that truly is.
Yeah, you should, man. It's fun. And you know, I got caught up in looking up cats that I ain't never seen play and trying to find some YouTube clips of somebody. And, you know, Dave DeBuscher, all I could do was read about him. I couldn't even find no footage.
Sure. Because what you remember when you know, even as a kid, what you remember isn't necessarily a career. Like I say,
exactly.
when I talk about Bernard King, it's just a few games I got to watch this brother play.
Right.
And David Thompson. When you talk about players of all time, guys,
and as a kid, you see the game differently. As a kid, you see the game differently than you do as an adult. As you grow and you learn more about the game, you see different things differently about different players.
When my fascination with Dr. J was how, you know, when he dominated the ABA, it was like,
did somebody stop having an MMA fight on the phone? Is Bone Jones in somebody's living room beating the shit out of them right now or what? Somebody's getting effed up.
Yeah.
Am I bad? Is it my shirt?
I don't know what it is, man. Something's crackling, man.
Is that crackling?
Yeah, something was crackling, man. It sounded like somebody was having some furniture was moving. What Bernie Mac say? It's some furniture moving.
Some furniture moving up this moment. It needs a misunderstanding.
Right. Yeah.
But no, that you know when
so,
to Ginobili, yeah, I see where you could get some flack for that.
Yeah, I get it. You know, I know why I got him in there, but I could get why somebody else would be like, why you got Ginobili in your list? I get that. I ain't mad at the flag. We all gonna take some punches on this one. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah, that's right.
And being my age, you know, when I make a top 50, I'm betting that Ginobili ain't gonna be there, you know?
Yeah.
That's just the way that it is. But my perception of basketball and what, you know, and we talked about this before. I hated Michael Jordan when he first came in the league. I hated what he could do to a team sport. And I had to grow into the idea that, you know, he was that much better than Dr. J. That just made me sick. You know, I just hated that.
Yep. And I would say that, you know, when I talked about Ginobili, what I said was that, Ray, you probably could understand this. I put Ginobili in that Ricky Pierce, that Andrew Toney, that category of cat,
yeah.
That
McGuire.
Every time you played every time you played him, everybody didn't want to play. But you necessarily mm-hmm. wouldn't rank him, but when it was a cat that you were playing at that period, everybody would say he was tough to play against. You know?
And that's what I value with Ginobili. That's why I had him where I had him, is because I think, you know, he's one of those guys where if he's not on that team has a different mentality. Like,
yeah.
Duncan's a great player, but Ginobili gave that team an edge. Ginobili
yeah.
had that I don't give a shit mentality that you need from at least one or two guys on your squad. Every team
yeah,
got
I
that. I mean, Ginobili, as a European dude, he's going in there trying to dunk on everybody. You know, he's playing tough. He's you know, he's getting in people's faces.
I always talk about that.
Go ahead.
You know, Danny Ainge. Danny Ainge is like that. You know, Danny Ainge, Danny Ainge ain't never going to make anybody's top 50. But if you were on a, if you were up at the park, you know, and you got, you know, 50 ball players up there, you're going to try to figure out how to get his ass on your team somehow, because you know the results are going to be good. The results are going to be what you want them to be. You know, he ain't going to put up, you know, great numbers, but whenever there's a steal that needs to be made or a charge that has to be taken or a foul that has to be given, that's the guy that's going to do it, you know, because he just knows how to win basketball games. And it isn't always about, you know, 20 and 10 a night. And so there's always going to be guys like that that you just remember as players. You know, I never particularly liked Danny Ainge as a player. It's just it was one of those dudes that, you know, when my Sixers were going up against Boston, you had to account for him. It's like that big tight, you know, that big defensive end. Like, where's Ainge at? Because he's going to make a shot that you don't want him to take, you know.
Yeah, and they talk a lot about the big three, but he was always in the mix on big plays. And Ainge is not someone that people often talk a lot about.
But he did shit that you didn't, you know. He did stuff that you needed to have done. When somebody needed to get poked in the eye, Ainge was poking him in the eye. You know, when somebody needs to get undercut, Jules was undercutting him. You know, he just played
the
ring.
We need somebody to poke him in the eye, Angels. I'll do it.
Yeah.
I'll poke him. Tell me which one.
Yeah. And then he had that. Wasn't he from Brigham Young? He had that choir boy look, you know. I didn't mean to poke him in the eye. Well, you poked him in the eye three times, Danny. You poked him in the
wasn't
eye.
Wasn't me, Ruff. It wasn't
know?
Me.
Yeah. He'd get a bad call.
Oh, man.
And I can remember when he came in the league, you know, one of the first quotes I remember Danny Ainge was, or one of the first interviews I remember of him, was having Larry Bird tell him to quit helping people up. You knocked him down. Don't help him up. Don't go over there and give him a hand and get him off the floor. You knock him down, you turn your back and walk the other way. This is the NBA. And then all of a sudden, Danny Ainge is poking people in the eye and undercutting them, and he got it. You know?
So do we have to? Do we need to do our pick six?
Let's get into the pick six real quick, and we can wrap it up for this after hour session. Let me get a writing utensil real quick. Something to write these down with.
Did you guys have a good holiday?
Oh yeah.
Great holiday.
Yeah, how about yourself?
Yeah. Oh, you know me, it's deer season.
I was gonna say you're probably up in a tree stand somewhere. As soon as the fool got in your belly, you probably lay down for a little bit, ran out, jumped in the truck, hit a tree stand.
I did take that day off. I didn't even go out. Didn't even go
all right.
Out. And I only got into the tree stand once. I got into the tree stand.
I'm glad you're healthy. Last year you fell out, I thought you were going to die.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. I sat up in that tree stand this year, and it's like, you know, and I hate to admit it, you know, but I used to smoke that weed. Now, if you hit that weed now, you sit around paranoid. You're holding on to shit that you shouldn't hold on to. I got up in that tree stand.
Yeah, you can't do that while you're hunting, dog.
No.
You be hearing all types of shit in the woods.
I'm just saying that what you remember used to be fun. It ain't no fun anymore. I got in that tree stand this year and went, I got to get down. I got to get down. I can't sit up here. I can't do this.
Right. This ain't working like it used to.
And to me, that was hunting. That was, you know, you get up in the tree stand and all the animals don't know, you know. Ain't nobody looking for a 300-pound man in a tree.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great way to do it, but I don't have the nerve of steel. I can't do it.
All right, so here we go with the pick six. All right, we got three pro football games. We got three college basketball games because ain't no college football popping off right now. First game, we got the New York Giants at Dallas. Filthy, who you taking? Filthy, you still there? Did we lose him? Hold on, let me see. Yeah, I think we lost Phil. So we'll go ahead and get these. I have him email me his picks. Ray, who are you taking?
Give me Dallas. I hate this thing. But give me Dallas.
Okay. All right, D-Will, who are you taking?
Dallas.
Dallas? Yeah, I got to go Dallas, too. I went Dallas, too. All right, we got Houston at Cincinnati. I took Cincinnati on that one. Ray, who are you taking?
I take Houston.
Houston, all right.
Yep.
D. Wills, who are you taking?
I think Cincinnati. I think they'll bounce back.
All right. Cincinnati. Then we got New Orleans at Tennessee. I took New Orleans because anybody fucking with them right now. Ray, who are you taking?
I'll take New Orleans at that one, too.
All right. And D. Wills, who are you taking?
New Orleans. Did somebody prove it?
Yeah. I think they the Packers lucky they don't play them. They played them week one and don't play them no more. Because I don't think the Packers would be undefeated if they had to play them right now.
Wow.
Then we got these basketball games. We got Ohio State at Kansas. I took Ohio State. D-Wills, who you taking?
I'm taking Ohio State. Them boys put something on, dude. Like they stole the government cheese.
Yeah.
I like
Ray,
that
who
too.
You taking?
Give me Ohio State.
Okay. Then we got Kentucky at Indiana. I'm taking Kentucky. Them boys play. Them youngsters. That kid, Anthony Davis. He's going when he fill out, he's gonna be he's like the next step, the next evolution of KG. The kid can do a little bit of everything. He's tough. So I took Kentucky in that one. Ray, who you taking?
Now give me Indiana.
Okay. Upset.
Yeah.
All right, D-Wills, who you taking?
Kentucky just plays good defense. They got some guys scrapping and doing well. I think Kentucky's going to win this one on the road.
All right. And then we got Harvard, ranked number 24, Tommy Amaker holding it down against UConn. I took UConn at home. I think UConn need a win right now for their young psyche. Who you taking, Ray?
Give me UConn. I'll take UConn.
UConn? D. Wills, who you taking?
I'm taking UConn. I ain't supporting Amaker.
All right, I'm going to throw an extra one in there. This wasn't in the rundown, but Heisman pick. I'm going RG3. I want Monty Ball to win it, but I think RG3 is going to get it for my Heisman pick. Who you got with the Heisman, Ray?
I think, you know, I can't overlook all the running touchdowns. I think Ball's got to take it.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get it, man. I think they want to give it to an Alabama dude for some reason. I just feel like they want to give Richardson the damn trophy. And if you put the two next to each other, it ain't even a comparison. If you put the two players next to each other, it's not a comparison.
Right.
All right. Who you taking, Devon?
It's gonna be Trent Richardson, man. They've been dogging Big Ten, Wisconsin. I've been listening to this SEC talk, and I've been listening to folks talk a lot of stuff, and I just sit back and I'm like, damn. People drinking all kinds of Kool-Aid on this one.
Yeah, I'm listening to Robert Smith talk about why he gave Richardson his vote, and I'm listening to him, and I'm like, yeah, Richardson played big in big games, but so did Monty Ball. And Monty Ball's numbers is better overall. Monty Ball didn't have a bad game all year.
And they want to talk about.
I mean, you don't score 38 touchdowns and have bad games. You just can't.
It's
just too many damn scores to have.
Yeah, and they want to say that he didn't have, you know, comparing to Barry Sanders, did he have the kind of runs that Barry said? I mean, I'm just looking at this. I'm like, y'all finding every excuse. And at some point, hopefully next week, we'll talk about this. Is the same thing that they're using to justify the Alabama-LSU game, is the same thing they used against Michigan when they lost at Ohio State after Bo lost.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? Ohio State
mm-hmm.
and Michigan were the top two teams.
Yep.
Everybody used those same things against Michigan, and it was the human poll, again, that decided that Michigan wouldn't go and had a rematch against Ohio State. Same thing. And it's just funny how these folks can – and nobody's remembering that. Every time I hear a talk show, I want to call in and say, you know, some of y'all folks are making the same argument against Michigan. We don't want to see that one again. Even though it was a great game. If y'all remember, that game in Columbus was a great game between Michigan and Ohio State. Everybody said they didn't want to see it again. So
we already saw that.
The hypocrisy is the one that I'm just losing on this. I'm not saying that LSU and Alabama are not the best teams.
What it says is that there's an SEC bias. That's what it says. There's a distinct SEC bias. And all these other conferences, like you got your little conference championship games, and they don't matter.
Yeah.
They don't matter. Because we're going to get an SEC team. And if we need to, we're going to get another SEC team, and that's going to be our championship game.
And the argument they use is that this is the argument I use, and I think the great example I've ever used was before they changed to, I think, when they made it to 64 or not, or just let it be the first shift, when the ACC only sent one team. I talked to you about this. And there were a lot of people going, I mean, the ACC was the lead, but only one team could go. And you could make an argument that the number two or number three ACC team would be a seed and all of this stuff in the tournament. But there are certain these things ebb and flow and change over 10, 15, 20-year periods. And there are going to be times where certain leagues are going to be deep. That's just the way it goes. And so when people say, well, you should go with the second, third, and Alabama didn't win their division, but it's clearly a strip, even though they only beat four ranked teams just like Oklahoma State. You know, it's one of those things where this thing could shift in the next 10 years to the Pac-12. You know, you get USC back on, who is the SEC killer, back on track. This thing could shift in the next 10 years, and now, you know, people in the Southeast are complaining that the Pac-10 is getting all the love. So it is what it is with the system that you have. You know, as long as you have the system that you have, the only way you can tell who the champion is by who wins the conference championship. It's the only thing you know. Because you don't have any other mechanism for saying who won it. And some leagues are just going to be stronger than others over time. So that's my point that I'm arguing, because the system is faulty. So you can't then come up with something else to rationalize for Alabama. It's just one of those things. So hopefully that might be something we got to get a little deeper into.
Yeah. But then at the same time, like, I don't need the Boise State coach coming out whining. Like, it's been the system. You should say this at the beginning of the season. It didn't work for y'all, so now it's jacked up.
Yeah,
you know, because if they was in the BCS bowl, he wouldn't complain about it. He wouldn't complain about the system being broke last year.
So you see what they did? Now they're going to be Boise State is in the Big East.
Right.
They announced that. So
now
he's like, well, we can't beat them. We got to join them. So
now
you got the Big East with three teams that are on the West.
Right, way west.
The only way
San Diego State. Ain't nothing east about San Diego State unless you're from Japan.
That's the only way they can get to the table.
Right.
We got to get into that a little bit next week. But I love the format that we've had with this top 50.
Yeah.
We've been doing this. So this has been really good, man. My computer is back up. I got to see what's going on here. because it basically got a virus or something. I had to restore it. Oh, man, this is, was a crazy night. That's when you, did you get the text from me?
Yeah, yeah.
So, but this has been good. So I'm looking forward to getting into these top, this next group, because this is where the arguments are going to happen.
Yeah, this is, as we get closer, because we ain't even gotten to the real lightning rod catch yet. We're going to get there, though. Yeah, but I'm going to let y'all go, man. I got to get going, get to bed, get up in the morning. Y'all take care.
All right, take care.
You too.
All right. Peace.
Take care, D.